All right. The time is 9:35 on February 2nd. I call the meeting of the Committee on Behavior Analysts to order. The meeting is hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed to this fact and been supplied with the meeting access instructions. I will be serving as the acting chair for today's meeting. Ms. Mouse, would you mind taking role, or Ms. Pakinon?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will do the roll call. Dr. Byron?
Present. Sorry, couldn't get off mute.
That's okay. Dr. Davey?
Present.
Ms. Denton?
Present.
Dr. Sinha?
Here.
And Dr. Raitt is absent. We have a quorum.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Malice. Just some general things to discuss. Board staff, pleasure working with you all, and thank you for all the assistance, compiling all the data and information, and seeking out information that we don't have. Appreciated, Ms. Galvin, your ongoing wisdom in the law and helping us along is very needed, and we really appreciate it as well. Those of you, my fellow committee members, appreciate you guys taking the time to do this. And for those of the community members, community that's attending, we appreciate you being here as well. Another note is the Board of Psychologist Examiners, this Committee on Behavior Analysts, is an ACE continuing education provider. If you attend our meeting today, you're eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification, Arizona license, or renewal. To claim this credit, make a note of the code words provided hourly throughout the meeting. To report the code words to board staff for purpose of earning continuing education credit, look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. So, next agenda item, we're going to approve the minutes. For December 1st, the regular session and the executive session minutes. We will not be addressing the January 5th regular and executive session minutes, as we don't have quorum for that. Do I have a motion to approve the December 1st minutes?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
I will second.
Second. Oh, sorry, Tish.
2 seconds.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right. Next agenda item, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding complaint number 24-18 against Sean Habe, and for recommendations to the board. Note that for this, a person or representative of the person who's filed is subject to the complaint is present today may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complaint or respond after their statement. Only individuals directed involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who may speak out with committee approval will be warned twice by myself, not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permit to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients or children in the complaint. Be aware that the content of the records involved in these complaints is confidential, and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. The committee may go into executive session to discuss any confidential records or to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Gene Galvin. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items based on the parties present and request to speak. Let's move forward with the complaint. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that. Would you mind providing a summary for us?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And so in summary, what we have here is that we received a complaint with regard to our licensee essentially providing supervision to an RBT that may have been or may not have been involved in an incident at a school with a particular client that it may or may not have been on the licensee's caseload. The complaint alleges that a student that was enrolled in the Breakthrough Academy was being provided services by a paraprofessional who was also an RBT, and that during a particular incident that the child that the RBT was working with or the paraprofessional was working with may have been pinned down during a perhaps during a behavioral episode. The committee will note that there is a significant amount of documentation around incident reports for this particular child, as well as something the school referred to as ouch reports when individuals were injured. There's also an IEP that's in place, and you also note that in taking a look at that IEP, that it does not appear that our licensee's name appears anywhere in that documentation as well. The crux of the issue is whether or not the RBT at the time, who was registered on the BACB's website as being supervised by Mr. Happ, was actually working with this individual child. Complaint claims that that is in the affirmative. Our licensee comes back and essentially says that this child's case was not on his caseload, and that has made the statement that if the RBT that he was supervising was working with his client, it was not on a day-to-day basis and only as perhaps a substitute. Looking forward to hearing more from our licensee on this, as I understand that the complaint will not be present today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. And as Dr. Davey stated, the complainant is not present. Is that confirmed? And what actually is going on, Ms. Packenham?
Mr. Chair, I can clarify. Yes, the complainant informed me that due to some travel, she cannot attend today. But I do see that the licensee is present.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mr. Happ, would you please unmute yourself, state your name for the record, and this is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes, and we may have some follow-up questions for you as well. And then also, yeah, thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, you can finish. My name is Mr. Hoppy. Sorry, everybody gets around, so there's
thank
no...
you. That was actually going to be my question, but I realized you were going to be saying your name anyway, so thank you.
Yeah, Sean Hoppy, so don't worry, everybody gets it wrong anyway, so there's no offense. The only thing I can say to related to this kind of complaint was what's related to my statement. The individual that they were complaining about was filling in for that day to provide services to that end, where classroom services to that individual. A situation that I wasn't made aware of until I was contacted by the complainee was talked to me about it, and I really and truly never had that person on my caseload at that school. Never provided services to him. So I don't have any, all the information is, sorry, I'm a little nervous. I'm just trying to fill in, like adding more, but providing service, I had never provided services to this individual.
All right, great. Thank you, Mr. Hoppy. And then do any committee members have any questions for Mr. Hoppy? Dr. Davey.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Hoppy. And yes, I can appreciate the heightened state that's coming and talking to us can produce. And so please, you know, take all the time you need to kind of reflect on the question and make your response. And know that today, you know, we're really just trying to figure out, you know, sort through the information we have. We received a file that was over 3,000 pages deep, both clinical records as well as some school records, as well as documentation that in terms of your written statement. And the committee has taken the time to review that as it sees fit, to be able to kind of discern, you know, where we stand today. And so I just have some very just straightforward questions for you, and some of them you already alluded to. But I think my first question is, you know, in your one, why don't we start with what your role is at, or your role was at the time at the Breakthrough Academy?
My role is I consult with them. And during those times, what I usually consult with my RBTs about is making sure they stand in good standing. But they're usually, it's related to classroom work related. So are they providing, you know, working within positive behavior support, maintaining regulatory ABA, sorry, just stumbling my words, but maintain regular supervision within the classroom situation. So they're mostly teaching or they're aides. And when they're working with anybody, they're working as aides within the classroom. So I'm making sure that they providing support, but positive supports within that.
So in your role, in terms of, as your role, as you describe it, are you... as that consultant, do you write behavior intervention plans for individual students?
No, I do not. Mm-hmm. I do not write individual behavior plans.
Okay. And then in terms of who would, from your understanding at the school level, who would be in charge of that? If it's not you, who would write something like that for a particular, student served at Breakthrough Academy?
It's usually related to but it's usually related to they do have like a behavior specialist or, you know, that's under the owner at the time, and them to usually consult with that, with developing those behavior action plans. They don't really develop full behavior plans.
Thank you for that. And then with regard to this particular complaint, prior to the complainant WC contacting you, Mr. Hoppe, were you aware of the student in question, or had you worked with the student in question?
No, I never worked with the student in question. The overall situation was I aware of the student? I knew of the student, like I mentioned there. But was I working with the student? No. Due to casual observations that I wasn't professional observations or anything like that, but you would see things happen. So I was aware of the student, but I never provided any do this or do that because the RBTs weren't working with them.
Okay. And then... you know, can you describe, so in terms of the conversation when WC reaches out to you, right, starts to ask some questions about this particular client, you know, I believe that in both the complaint and in your written response, what we hear is that you're not aware or privy to much of the information that the complainant is speaking of, and that you offer to go get some additional information. It's our understanding that the follow-up with the complainant did not happen, but that you did provide follow-up information that you were able to obtain from the school in your written response that has to do with essentially a different narrative as to how the student may have had a slight bruise on their back following a behavioral incident. In terms of, you know, the discussion with the complainant and what you offered to do and kind of your follow-up with the complainant, can you kind of walk us through that scenario?
Well, when I got the call from the original complainant, which I know on the original complainant, they said October 20th, October 19th. During that original talk, she did not inform me she had any consent to talk with talk with me about this individual. It was like, I don't know if I should be doing this or not. So that's what she said, not me. So I was like, okay, may I go? I need to get more information to check on this, and I may call you back. But since I didn't have consent. So I went to talk as in the investigation a couple of days later due to I wasn't present, but I went to talk to them, to the actually owner and also the RBT to get information of the scenario of mm-hmm. like what could happen and what happened during that session, not what happened. And they informed me of what I reported on that. He started hitting, they were working on the hallway. He started hitting, kicking, and as he was attempting to kick other students as he was coming by. They said once the kids were clear, she went up to block and get in the way, and then he came back down into a padded chair. That's what was reported to me. And the whole incident, she said, would last briefly and was reported up to 3 seconds. The reason I didn't follow up with her, I had no release of information provided from me or from her from either locations, from my Harmony location or from the school location. So I never saw those released, even though I asked personally.
Thank you. I appreciate your answers and you being here today to be able to answer these questions. Mr. Chair, I will turn it back over to you as I don't have any further questions at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Do any committee members have any other questions for Mr. Humphrey? Okay. I have no further questions. Dr. Davey, you exhausted the questions that I was... No, you're perfect. Thank you. Appreciate it. Do we make a motion at this time?
Probably discussion, right?
Okay. All right. Deliberations. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Davey.
I'll be happy to kick us off on the deliberation. I think my line of questioning, was pretty transparent, as I just wanted to understand, Mr. Hoppe's role in this particular situation, in terms of the documentation, in terms of the responses, in terms of the volume of information provided. I believe that Mr. Hoppe is serving as a general classroom consultant in these situations as per his contract. He has kept his supervision in line with BACB requirements and therefore our requirements around RBT supervision. I really see nothing in this complaint that rises to the level of a statute violation. And I for one, think this should be moved to a dismissal.
Dr. Davey, any other comments from committee members? And just for the record, too, Dr. Davey, I agree with you as well. It's I don't see any concerns that rise to statutory violations or ethical violations. So, Dr. Davey, would you like to make a motion on that?
Yes, I'll go ahead and make the motion for this to be dismissed. I'll make the motion that the committee make the recommendation to the full board that this complaint be dismissed.
All right, thank you. Do I have a second on that?
Second.
All right. Any further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Hoppe, for your cooperation. And just again, for those that are listening, like, this is nerve-wracking and appreciate you being here to answer the questions, which makes the process go a lot smoother. So thank you again.
And thank you for the opportunity to speak. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Chair, so while Mr. Hoppe's still here, we will notify you about the scheduling. Obviously, you heard this is a recommendation to the board. We'll notify you about the scheduling of presenting the recommendation to the board. So we'll be following up by email with you.
I do believe we need a vote.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right. Thank you, Mr. Hoppe, for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, so we'll move on to agenda item number 6, discussion, consideration, possible action, recommendation to the board pertaining to approval of behavior analyst applicants. I am going to change up the order. Dr. Davey, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to address applicant number 18, William Martin, if we could lead off with that. And then Dr. Davey, I see your hand up.
Is there... I just wanted to take a moment to thank board staff and the thoroughness of the subpoena on the case that we just went through and the information was provided. I know that the 3,000 pages was substantial, but being able to look through the IEP as well as the educational records and the incident reports really allowed in review of this to come with some just plenty of questions to get to the facts and not have to go out and chase, you know, with additional requests for information. So I just wanted to take a moment, Dr. Sunhoff, to thank our investigator and our board staff and the thoroughness of the documentation provided so that we could adjudicate this matter in a timely and efficient fashion.
Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Davey, well stated. Thank you. I concur. It was a mound of information to compile, but it was very helpful as we reviewed the case and obviously were able to adjudicate it today. So,
yep. And then I'm happy, Mr. Chair, to kick off with Mr. Martin, who I see is here as well. And so,
hi, everyone. Good to see you all again.
Good to see you as well. First off, thank you for attending last time, and I appreciate the information that you were able to pull forward to provide to the committee. And so for point of reference to committee members, last time we reviewed Mr. Martin's application, and in that application, we identified that he was short of the 1,500 hours of supervision needed to qualify for licensure per R 424.404.2, which states that they need to have that 1,500 hours of supervised experience. And at the time, Mr. Martin's application included approximately 853 hours of supervision that had gone through his intensive practicum process, which was a well-known process that the BACB had put in place, that was in place, I think, until 2015-16, somewhere in there, and then was sunsetted. We spoke with Mr. Martin briefly at the committee level and asked some questions about whether or not there was other supervision that he could produce that would get him over the 1,500 mark, as he is obviously someone who has been practicing in the field for some period of time and would we believed it would be of value to the public in Arizona. Mr. Martin has come forward with additional information that was provided by a Ms. Planter for supervision that occurred from October of 2014 through September of 2015. And so that is a period that falls after the supervision that the first 700 hours that was done through 2013 through 2014. So this looks like this was right after the individual completed their intensive practicum hours. And so the individual that has signed off on this is in North Carolina, is licensed in North Carolina as well, and attested to 1,560 hours, answered all of our questions with regard to supervision. At the time of supervision in North Carolina, licensure was not in place. And so even though the individual signed today is licensed, it was not an issue at that particular time. I believe with this additional information that is in place that we can move this application forward. And I would be open to hearing from any of the committee members that may have any reservations or discussion around the matter.
No, I just want to say, Mr. Martin, thank you for your persistence in helping us get this move forward. Appreciate it. I know there's probably some level of frustration over the few weeks. You don't have to admit to that unless you want to, but I understand, but I appreciate you stuck this out, and it appears that we're going to be able to move this forward to the board. So appreciate the your efforts in this.
Yeah, thank you. And I also appreciate everyone on this call for working with me over the past number of months to get this sorted out. I didn't think I would be thankful for the North Carolina practice standards that were in place in 2014, but I am now because it made it quite easy to talk to Dr. Plattner and you know, sort out kind of what the supervision of our practice looked like. So appreciate the guidance and glad we can move forward.
Thank you.
So if nothing else from committee members, Dr. Stenhoff, I'd like to see this move to the full board for approval for a license for the state of Arizona.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. I'm also going to probably call out of order just to provide a favor to those who are in attendance today as well. So just be ready for your application to be called. The first applicant I'll call is actually the first one on our list, Erica McCann. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCann came forth seeking licensure in the state of Arizona after passing her exam on October 13th of 2020. She graduated from George Mason University with a Master's of Education on August 24th of 2019. She also received her graduate certificate in applied behavior analysis from George Mason University, which covered her verified course sequence. All of her supervision occurred in the state of Virginia, ranging from August 1st of 2019 until September 1st of 2020. There were 1,500 hours that were completed. The license applicant here is also licensed in Virginia since November of 2020. That license is still active. It is in good standing. I did not note any concerns with this application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for potential approval.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Denton. Next application we'll review. I was the lead on that one. It's Megan Mackey. Ms. Mackey graduated in May of 2023 for University of Northern Colorado with a master's in applied behavior analysis. She was certified as a BCBA in July of 2022. She received 2,005 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors in Colorado, which doesn't require licensure. And I didn't note any concerns or recommend that it be moved forward to the board for approval. Next application we'll review is Sarah Arevalo. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Thank you. Ms. Arevalo passed her exam on October 9th of 2023 after graduating with a master's degree in special education with behavior support emphasis from the University of Arizona in May of 2020. All of her supervision did occur in Arizona under licensed behavior analysts in the state who were licensed at the time of the supervision. Supervision started in September of 2020 and ended in June of 2022. You know, there was over 2,000 hours of supervised experience that were in here. Between two of the supervisors, that it added up to the 1,500. One of the supervisors, I wasn't certain how many hours had been supervised by that supervisor, but ultimately the 1,500 hour requirement was met, regardless of how much that other supervisor had provided. He was licensed, so no concerns there. Small clerical adjustment here. Dr. Rebecca Hartzell is listed as the doctoral degree major advisor under that psychologist section of the application. If that can just be corrected, I see no reason why this shouldn't move forward to the full board for potential approval.
Next application is Kyla Bernal Christensen. Dr. Dave, you're the lead on that.
Thank you very much. Ms. Christensen's come forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. Her application was completed in its entirety, showing that she did her master's work at the University of West Florida, focused in special education. Her supervision activities occurred in the state of Arizona with Arizona licensed behavior analyst, all in good standing. I see no issues with this application and would like to see it move forward to the full board for the issue of a license.
All right, thank you. Next application is Brittany Fetchner. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Let me get there just a second. Okay, Ms. Fleschner passed her exam on November 30th of 2018 after graduating in September of 2018 with a Master's of Science in Applied Behavior Analysis from National University. Supervision occurred across multiple supervisors in two different states. California was where most of the supervision had occurred. But additional supervision was provided when the applicant was in Arizona. There were over 1,500 hours of supervision provided. And so I see that the statutory requirement of that 1,500 hours has been met. The concern that is presented here, it may be something that we need to talk about later on, is, and the applicant is here, so perhaps I can ask this question at this point. It was noted that the applicant started working in what appears to be a behavior analyst capacity in Arizona on July 27th of 2023. But supervision of that practice is noted by the LBA in the state of Arizona on October 1st. So what I was concerned about here is there appears to be that time period between July 27th and October 1st of 2023 where perhaps there was not supervision occurring while there was behavior analytic practice occurring. Mr. Chair, may I ask a couple of questions of the license applicant?
Yes, please.
Okay. Ms. Fleschner, I hope I'm pronouncing that correct. Would you mind explaining the practice that you were conducting from July to October? Was it in the capacity of a behavior analyst?
So I was underneath like an LBA the whole time. I just recorded those for hours because they were still building my caseload, but I've always had my LBA supervising me. That's Candace Vandella.
Okay. I think this can move forward to the full board for potential approval. I think I'll just bring it back up a little bit later whenever we get to future agenda items.
Does any other committee members have anything regarding this application? Comments? Okay, great. All right, next we'll move on to the next application is Melissa Payne. Ms. Payne graduated in January of 2021 from National University with Master's in Applied Behavior Analysis. She was certified as a BCBA in March of 2023. She received 1,544 hours of supervision under multiple California BCBAs that obviously don't require licensure at this time. There was a couple of issues with the application. Ms. Payne made multiple attempts to get her verification from Donna Cheeseman, from what I could tell from the documentation, there was no success. And I know Ms. Payne, you're here. If you could answer a couple of questions for me, I'd appreciate it. Did you hear from Ms. Cheeseman at all?
In May, I did attempt to contact her. And she said, okay, I tried the link and it was not the correct link. And then since then, I have not been able to contact her. And I think there's like four or five different attempts made with her and she has not still contacted me.
Okay. And then those copies that we do have in the application, are those your final verification forms, your personal copies?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Okay. All right. Given this scenario, and there were multiple attempts, and the fact that Ms. Payne does have her final verification forms and is approved as a by the BACV to be a BCBA, I would recommend it move forward to the board for approval at this time. Are there any other comments regarding this application due to the nature of it from other committee members?
No, I think given, Mr. Chair, given where the supervision occurred, you know, it's not as if a license issue is going to pop up since it was in California. I think the verification documentation from the BACB and the multiple attempts by the licensee to gather that information is appropriate. Okay. It is a direct violation of BACB code of ethics for the supervisor not to respond. And so I would like to see us move forward with some action around that.
Okay. I agree. And board staff, would you make a note of that? And then we can address as a future agenda item as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I want to make sure that I'm remembering this clearly, or please correct me if I'm wrong. So the recommendation to the board is to approve the license, but a recommendation will be a separate and distinct recommendation will be made to the board relative to a possible referral to the BACB for the supervisor's failure to respond and cite the code section that Dr. Davey indicated is on point for the matter.
That's correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Packenham. All right. Let's see. Next application is Jason Silva. Ms. Denton, you are the lead for that. And as with these that I've called so far, Mr. Silva is also here.
Mr. Silva passed his exam on July 6th of 2021 after graduating in December of 2017 with a Master's of Education in Curriculum and Instruction from Arizona State University. His supervision occurred in the state of Utah under a variety of behavior analysts. That supervision period was from August 1st of 2017 until January 1st of 2019. So whenever we look through here, Utah did have licensure at the time of the supervision experience. There's kind of an interesting piece here. Whenever we look at the different supervisors, there is a supervisor, Ashley Roll, and this supervisor, whenever you look through her license verification in Utah, she's licensed as an associate clinical health or an associate clinical mental health counselor extern. And that license was effective in December of 2022, but the supervision experience preceded that. You know, I didn't know if there was some additional documentation where Ashley was licensed as a behavior analyst in Utah at that time. It is listed on the multiple supervisors at one site verification form that she was licensed on October 28th of 2016. But I didn't see verification of that. Ms. Roll provided 100 hours of supervision. Which would mean if she's not a licensed behavior analyst, if she was not at the time of the supervision experience, that those 1500 hours would actually be short by 100 hours. So, you know, that could be some additional information that is needed in order to ensure that 1500 hour statutory requirement is met. Is the applicant able to answer a question surrounding Ms. Roll's licensure status at the time of supervision?
Mr. Silva, are you available for comment? Okay.
I believe I uploaded the incorrect licensure because Ms. Roll was licensed as a clinical mental health or an associate clinical mental health counselor, but she also was licensed in the state of Utah beginning 10/28 of 2016. I have it pulled up on the Utah Department of Occupational Professional Licensure website at this moment. So that documentation was probably just uploaded incorrectly on my part.
Board staff, is this something that could be looked at right now and uploaded to the file, and then we could move forward? Because that's the concern that I have. It's just that licensure piece. And if that's the case, then the 1500 hours would have been met.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Ms. Denton, here's what I'm going to suggest. If the committee is willing to do this, Mr. Silva can take care of facilitating the submission of that information. He can email it directly to Ms. Malice or to the submission email. She can retrieve it and upload it to your folder. So why don't we table action on this application and come back to it, whether at the end of the applications or even later on the agenda. So, you know, we aren't suspending any action past this meeting. Does that sound okay?
Yeah. That sounds fine to me. The other piece on this is there is a name of a doctoral degree major advisor, which is Samuel Diganji. I anticipate that's just a typographical error that needs to be corrected. I didn't see any documentation of a doctorate degree here. So just correcting that information on the application.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Ms. Denton. So what we learned, and I know you were absent from the previous committee meeting, so we addressed this issue at that time. What we learned by testing the system was that applicants were filling out appropriately those fields in the education section. The system was pulling that data and populating that data into the wrong field.
Okay.
So that's why we saw such a strange proliferation of those types of entry errors.
That's
so
no longer a concern.
Right. So it's been fixed. We just still have some applications working through the process where that's going to be reflective because, you know, what's done is done. So, you know, if you trust that, you know, this is something that can be handled, you know, by staff, we can take care of, you know, that clarification in the system. And at some point, this won't be a problem anymore.
Well, I will no longer point it out as a concern as we're going through. Before I finish up this application, I just had a question, Mr. Silva. It's noted that you started working in Arizona in October of 2023, providing supervision of ABA services at Centria. Is this something where supervision has been occurring of your practice by a licensed behavior analyst?
Correct. I've been working technically as a behavior analytic trainee under the extended licensure and supervision of an Arizona licensed behavior analyst.
Okay. Thank you. You know, we, like you said, Ms. Hackenon, we can come back to this with the information about Ashley Roll and then move from there.
And that information has been emailed to the BASU submissions email address as of 2 minutes ago.
Thank you, Mr. Silva.
You're muted, Dr. Stenoff.
Yeah, thank you. All right, so next application we'll review is Karina Percival. Ms. Percival graduated in February of 2021 from Purdue University with a master's in psychology. She was certified as a BCBA in September of 2022. She received 1,501 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors in California, which doesn't require licensure. Of note, her supervisor, Phil Peters, who supervised 217.75 hours, indicated that he did not observe Ms. Percival conducting behavior assessments, designing, implementing, and monitoring skill acquisition behavior reduction programs, and overseeing the implementation of behavior analytic programs by others. However, her other supervisors indicated that they in fact had, which accounted for 1,284 hours, which can be found on pages 24 to 29 of the PDF. Since her supervisors did, her other supervisor did observe her to that extent, I'm comfortable moving this forward to the board for approval. All right. Next, next application is, Nicole Moore. Ms. Dent, you're the lead on that.
Thank you. Ms. Moore passed her exam on August 26th of 2023 after graduating with a Master's of Arts in Special Education at Arizona State University in May of 2021. She received her supervision under multiple supervisors in the state of Arizona who were all licensed behavior analysts at the time of the supervision. There was over 1,500 hours of supervised experience that occurred between July 1st of 2021 and May 31st of 2023. Ms. Moore is also, she also holds a teaching certificate from the Arizona Department of Education since November 13th of 2021. That certification is in good standing with no disciplinary action or really anything of concern noted. I don't see any concerns with this application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for potential approval.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Dunn. Next application is Michelle Kalugin. I just messed that one up. Kalugin. I'm sorry. You're going to probably have to. Okay. And Dr. Davey, you are the lead on that one.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. So application was completed coming forward for licensure in the state of Arizona. Supervision looks good in terms of documentation as well as her work with her previous employers. All the hours are in line with our rules and regulations. Supervision occurred in the state of California in CARD. And really, the question I had is very similar to a question raised by Ms. Denton earlier. It appears that we've been, now have been working in Arizona for some period of time as a clinical supervisor. And so just want to verify, since the licensee is here, that in fact, she has been under someone who is licensed in the state of Arizona during this period of time.
Yeah, so I've been working as a behavior analytic trainee under a licensed NLBA candidate, Spendelli. Very centric.
I appreciate that. Thank you so very much. Dr. Stenhoff, I see no reason why this cannot move forward.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Next application is Melissa Broderick. Let's see. Ms. Den, you're the lead on that.
Thank you for a moment. I'm getting okay, here we go. Ms. Broderick passed her exam on August 31st of 2015. This is what the BACB registry says on the application. It's listed as August 30th of 2015, small clerical error. But she graduated in May of 2015 with a Master's of Science in Behavior Analysis and Therapy from Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. At the time of the supervision experience, licensure was not in place in Illinois, which was where that supervision occurred. Supervision occurred from January 5th of 2014 until May of 2015. So the challenge here is going to be similar to one that we faced a little bit earlier. This applicant did do an intensive practicum, and at that time was only required by the BACB to complete 750 hours of supervised experience. There was a total of 755 hours of experience that was supplied in the intensive practicum. And so as we look at this, you know, the BACB had an equation, as they do now for concentrated field work, where those hours would be multiplied essentially whenever you had that increased supervision. So with that being said, the concern here is that it is a statutory requirement in the state of Arizona that you have 1500 hours of supervised experience. So with that being said, there are a remainder of 745 hours of supervised experience that are either remaining or need to be supplied. And, you know, my recommendation would be a fair at this point to get either documentation of those additional 745 hours that would be supervised, or, you know, there needs to be an additional 745 hours accrued. So I know that is Ms. Broderick. I know this is a,
yeah, I am on here. I'm just trying to understand. Yeah. I'm just trying to understand how that works, because when I was doing my practicum, it was doubled, as you mentioned. So how does that work with now here?
So the Arizona statutes say that we're in line with the BACB on just about everything. But the 1500 hour requirement is a literal 1500 hours in the state of Arizona.
Okay. I'm just trying to understand how that would work, because I did all mine during school. So then I was able to go from that. So there's no, how does that work? I guess there's no other layer to that.
Have you practiced under a licensed behavior analyst in the state where if the state required licensure after being a BCBA to have documentation?
No, because Illinois doesn't have licensure. So there was no concern of that at that time.
Okay. Have you, so with that, did you practice under the supervision of a, like in a supervisory capacity after being certified? Like, I know having, it's a very strange question.
Like having a mentor, you're saying, or like somebody that was like observing me during doing my,
yes,
everything I was doing. Okay. I mean, when I was working in different capacities, I had supervisors that were observing my work and checking it and everything. Are you saying to try to get verification from those individuals?
That is what I am suggesting. If you have those hours that could be attested to, you know, and it meets those other pieces, that could be a potential avenue. But we would need documentation from those supervisors, and need to look at their eligibility to be a supervisor, because the 755 hours that were supplied are not enough for licensure in the state of Arizona.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, may I chime in just to sort of explain how we move forward with the request?
Yeah, please.
So the committee is authorized to issue what's called a first additional request for information. And so that's done through a formal letter. It will be sent to you in the next several days at some point, likely next week, where we outline specifically what it is that you are asked to submit. And so that is what that does is it stops the timeframes clock and affords you a very generous amount of time to collect that information and have it submitted. So that comes back to the committee. My suggestion would be, you know, to carefully read the letter and to supply, you know, anything, everything that you are able to collect that may meet the intent and the spirit of that request. But it really comes down to the documentation.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Next application is Sydney Buono. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that as well.
Uh, This applicant passed her exam on November 3rd of 2023 after graduating with the Master's of Science in Applied Behavior Analysis from Endicott College in January of 2023. The applicant received her supervision. Let's see. Actually, I didn't put in here what state the supervision occurred in. So I need to look through that in just a second. But supervision occurred under different supervisors who were qualified to provide that supervision from September 1st of 2021 until July 31st of 2023. With this, I didn't note any concerns with the application. The number of hours were sufficient. There were more than 1,500 hours of supervised experience. I would recommend that this moves forward to the full board for potential approval.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Denton. And let's go ahead. Ms. Malice has sent the information related to Mr. Silva's application regarding Ms. Roll. Let's take a moment to look at that, and we'll take care of that, and then we'll move back up to application number two. And then while we're doing that, Ms. Malice, would you mind sharing a code word for us for the CEs?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the code word, the first code word is flower. Flowers. Thank you.
And then, committee members, once you're done reviewing that, would you please let me know and we can finish our discussion with Mr. Silva?
I'm complete, sir. Thank you.
Was it emailed out or is it in the Google Drive?
Oh, sorry. It was emailed, and then Ms. Mouse, was it also uploaded to the Google Drive?
Mr. Chair, I have not uploaded it to the Google Drive, but I will do that right now.
An email is fine. Yeah, after reviewing this documentation, it does appear that she was licensed at the time of supervision, which would mean that 1,500 hours were supervised by licensed behavior analysts in the state of Utah. I have no concerns and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for potential approval.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And Mr. Silva, thank you for being here and being so responsive so we could get this taken care of quickly for you. Appreciate it. All right, applicant number two, Kara Ruppel. I'm the lead on that. Ms. Ruppel graduated in December of 2021 from the University of Cincinnati with a master's in behavior analysis. She was certified as a BCBA in April of 2023. She received 1,624 hours of supervision under multiple Arizona LBAs. There was a discrepancy between her application and the verification form, which was addressed by Ms. Ruppel. So other than that, I didn't note any concerns and recommend that it move forward to the board for approval. Let's see. Next application we'll review is Catherine Sierra Palacios. I'm also the lead on that one. Ms. Sierra Palacios graduated in January of 2018 from National University with a master's in teaching and specialization in applied behavior analysis. She was certified as a BCBA in July of 2023. She received 1,580 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors in California. I did not note any concerns with that application, recommend that it move forward to the board for approval. Next application we'll review is Jessica Braun. I'm also the lead on that. Ms. Braun graduated in August of 2021 from Arizona State University with a master's in sustainable solutions and certification applied behavior analysis. She was certified as a BCBA in January of 2022. She received 2,000 hours of supervision in Colorado, which doesn't require licensure. And I didn't note any other concerns with the application and recommend that it move forward to the board for approval. Next application is Lisa Harding. I'm also the lead on that. Ms. Harding graduated in December of 2020 from Arizona State University with a master's in applied behavior analysis. She was certified as a BCBA in August of 2023. She received 2,544 hours of supervision from multiple Arizona licensed behavior analysts, and I did not know any concerns with her application. Next application we'll review is, let's see, Jamie Lee. Ms. Dent, you're the lead on that.
Absolutely. This applicant came forward after passing their exam on October 25th of 2023. They graduated from the University of West Florida with a Master's of Arts in December of 2022, which is where they completed their verified course sequence. Their supervision occurred in the state of Arizona under licensed behavior analysts in the state. With that, there was over 1,500 hours of supervised experience that occurred. With the information that has been presented, I do not see any concerns with this application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for potential approval.
Okay, thank you. And the next application is Dominic Gary. Dr. Dave, you're the lead on that.
Thank you. And so, Dominique, is Dominique here by chance?
I don't think so, Dr. Davey.
So,
sorry, I thought I saw her in the. Yeah, she is here.
Yes, so hi, I'm sorry, I'm here.
Thank you.
Okay, I was having issues pressing the button. I'm here.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And so we had reached out. So we had Dominique's application up last time. And what we found was that she had submitted she personally had submitted her transcripts. Requirements in terms of administrative statute is that we need those transcripts from the original source. We asked Ms. Dominique to go back and request those from her university. As such, it appears that to date, board staff, correct me if I'm wrong, but we have still not received those from Capella University, correct?
That is correct, Dr. Daly. We have not received those transcripts from Capella University.
Yes. And so in your packet, board members, page 5 of the current application has the screenshot of where the the potential licensee, the applicant, tried to request those. And the question I have for Ms. Dominique is, when I look at the recipient, I still see the recipient as your email address and not the board. And so I'm wondering if on the day you submitted this, if they listened to you again instead of to our board staff. And so that is, again, I'm looking at the screenshot. I can't share my screen or I would, but it essentially says where are my transcripts order. And on the 9th, she orders them. She types in the recipient name correctly, but in the email address for delivery, it appears that she sent them to herself, which was similar to the original order. The first time we tried to process this, again, the recipient was Dominique Gary, and they were sent to her private address. So I'm thinking that is probably where we have the disconnect. My recommendation is still I would like to have that official transcript just because it is a part of our administrative code. And Ms. Gary, I'm more than happy to, you know, if the committee is so inclined, if we could get, you know, the screenshot of what you're producing today and perhaps that shows up by Friday, I would be happy to take this forward to the full board and get you approved. But today I'm still a little uneasy just based on the screenshots of what have been shared that it's actually getting to us or trying to get to us.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I have not received transcripts. I've been trying to get in touch with the school. I need to follow up on that, I guess, once more. I didn't realize the recipient email address is my address. That's interesting.
And I'm looking at the screenshot you submitted that says essentially recipient has us as the title, Arizona Board of Psychologists Examiners, but then the email that appears associated with that is your personal email address. And so
gotcha. That could be the disconnect. And I have not received the email transcripts emailed to me. So I may have to go in and put in another request, which sounds like that's what I'm going to need to do.
Yeah, I would just recommend that you take a screenshot again, just as you did with maybe perhaps that recipient outlined to us. And if it is that then the it's still a fail, then we will cross that bridge when we get there. But I would at least like to see that our email address is listed as the recipient before we move this fully forward. And again, in terms of timing and not having you wait another month, if this is something you can produce to us, then I would encourage board staff to try to figure out a way for me to present this to the full board next Friday if possible.
Okay, sounds good. So I just want to make sure I'm hearing you correctly. So I will go ahead and request new transcripts and make sure that I put in the accurate email address this time. And then if I screenshot that and send that over to you by next Friday, that process would be fine to potentially move me to the next steps.
I would say definitely send us that screenshot as part of your packet, but I would say,
okay,
until the transcripts are in our hands and I can look at them through, you know, either look at them if board staff feels it's appropriate, then I would move it forward Friday. If not, and they're not in our hands, then we will have to push this to a later date until we receive.
Gotcha. Okay.
Dominic, I appreciate you working through this. I know it's I'm sure it's frustrating on your end, but don't give up. And if you need additional guidance from board staff, I'm sure they're happy to speak to you.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to review my application.
So I think Dr. Stenhoff, on that, it's probably a no action at this point. Is that what you would like us to say?
Yeah, I think that would.
Thank you.
Okay. And then Dr. Davey, we're going to review the licensure by universal recognition. Ashley Hamilton, would you please review that?
That'll be a pretty quick one. Ms. Hamilton checks all boxes for this. She's produced her new rental agreement. She has had a license for over a year in the state she is moving from. And I'd like to see her move forward to receive a license through the universal recognition program.
Okay, great. All right. Do we have a motion regarding the applications?
I don't have all the numbers that we're holding on, so I'm hesitant to spit it out here. Hold on. So we're holding on 17. We're holding on, Jason, we solved. Were we holding on any others besides 17?
I don't think so, Dr. Davey. Board staff, do you?
Mr. Chair, we have a fair with item 15.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Okay.
I am double checking that maybe. Ms. Malice, do you have anything different?
Yes, she has her hand up.
Ms. Malice?
We just have the fair with Melissa Broderick and then holding on Dominique Gary. Yeah. And we had moved forward with Jason Silva as we saw that verification. So those two items.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So very good. So I'll make the motion that we accept the panel with the exception of Melissa Broderick and Dominique Gary. And I would also include in that motion to accept our behavior analyst application by universal licensure, Ashley Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And my motion is that those individuals are moved forward to the full board for consideration of their Arizona license.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Do I have a second on that?
I will second.
All right. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. All right. Let's see. Next item is discussion, consideration, possible action regarding election of 2024 committee chair. Ms. Pakanon.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Your statutes require that on an annual basis you elect a chair. We are just now addressing this in February due to some member absences that warranted, you know, a postponement until we had hopefully a full assembly of the committee We're close today, and so you may want to go ahead and proceed and just have the election and have that person serve as chair for the remainder of calendar year 2024. We do go by calendar year, not fiscal year. So that would be my recommendation. So staff, you know, is able to consult with a chair on a routine basis and, you know, not sort of have to figure out, you know, who is might be in a position to chair, you know, meetings from month to month. So I do recommend you address it today, even though just four members are present.
Okay. And Ms. Pakanon, at this time, has there been any nominations submitted to your office?
Mr. Chair, no one has self-nominated and no one has yet to nominate a colleague.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take that time now. Are there any nominations?
Does the nominee have to accept the nomination?
I would say absolutely yes. There's no
option. I hate to.
No, I'm just kidding. Ms. Galvin, I apologize for that levity. So
I would hate to delay the appointment of a chair, but I think the most appropriate person to nominate is Dr. Rates.
Okay. All right. Any other nominations?
Well, I also say Ms. Denton has done yeoman's work and outstanding job of leading us. You know, I also think that Ms. Denton would be quite capable of continuing as the chair if she was so inclined.
Yeah. Okay. Any other nominations? Okay. As far as point of order, Ms.
I guess question to Ms. Denton, would she even entertain that? I mean, again, to your point that they have to accept it.
I hate to take away the opportunity from Dr. Rates to step into this wonderful role, but I will accept the nomination.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then point of order with Ms. Galvin or Ms. Pakanon, what is our next step here?
You would vote on the first nominee.
Okay.
And if Dr. Rates has enough votes and secures that nomination, if she declines it later, we can come back to the committee.
Okay. All right. So we have two nominations. We have Dr. Rates and Ms. Denton.
Again, point of order, I just say, like, it's very hard to vote for, Dr. Rates without knowing whether she'll accept it. So it kind of puts us in an interesting bind.
It does. It does.
In a conundrum.
Ms. Galvin, would there be an issue with voting for the second nominee? Could we move forward with that to see where that lands?
With respect to Dr. Rates, I don't believe there was a second.
Mm-hmm.
So you could find that nomination failed for lack of a second just because she was not here, not because there was a lack of trust.
Thank you for that very important clarification, Ms. Galvin. All right. So, well, then let's move on to the second nomination. Do we have a second for that nomination?
Second.
Ms. Denton. Okay. Thank you. All right. So let's go ahead and vote. All in favor of Ms. Denton continuing her chair position, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Ms. Denton, congratulations.
Thank you.
So, yeah. Now, can I hand the gavel over, so to speak, at this point, or do I need to wait until the next meeting?
Oh, you can that finish either. This up.
Holy moly.
What was that, Ms. Galvin? I didn't hear the last part of that.
I think you can finish this up.
Okay, all right. Thank you for that confidence.
Yes, Mr. All right. Chair, I think you deserve a swan song, and so this is it. I suggest that we we go out of order, Mr. Chair, and prompt for the applicant for number 8, the reactivation request. I thought she was present earlier. I'm not sure I see her now, but maybe she's called in. So that's my suggestion. It may be that she's not here, in which case we can either hear it or stay in order.
Let's go ahead anyway. So Ms. Pakadon, are you referring to agenda item number 11 or 12? Or both?
No, the reactivation request for number 8, Dr. Davies, the lead for that one.
Okay, I must have a dated agenda then. Okay, I see it. Okay, yeah. So, Dr. Davy, would you mind doing that? Agenda item number 8?
Yeah, so, and I thank board staff for responding to my late night email as I was reviewing the actual applications last evening. If you notice through the application process, the information is there. Prorated CEUs are appropriate. However, there was a couple of boxes that were not checked on the application. And one that was checked, and I just wasn't quite sure what they meant by that and the information provided. So number 3, check the yes, that you're currently licensed or certified as behavior analyst. There is a Word document at the end that shows that it is just he is just certified as a behavior analyst. Number 13, do you currently use alcohol or other drugs in any way that impairs or limits your ability to practice behavior analysis safely and competently? If yes, please explain. The applicant left that unmarked either as a yes or no. Board staff reached out early this morning, and the applicant seeking reinstatement provided email responses with regard to our questions. The email responses again point us to the fact that there is no license that this individual holds, that they are only certified through the BACB. And then with regard to question number 13 around drugs and alcohol, that they failed to check that no, there's nothing that is impairing them at this time. And so, you know, I think as an administrative matter, you know, I'd like to see those boxes checked or that information attached to this so that we have a full record of this reinstatement. I think once administratively that is handled, this can move forward.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davy.
So board staff, is that, I mean, in terms of just getting those boxes checked appropriately, then I think we're good.
Ms. Pakadon, just so that I'm following this, I'm looking at the PDF agenda on the documentation on the Google Drive.
Is that what you had as 11?
I have it as 11, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see what I downloaded. Just a moment.
Okay. The one I've got printed in front of me has it as number 11 as well. 8 is actually Dr. Byra's.
I apologize. I probably had an old version in my browser, and that's why the numbering was off. So, was not an intentional misdirect on my part, I can assure you.
All right. And then.
Yes. You are correct. I was wrong.
All set. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I just want to make sure that we're aligned. Okay. Ms. Pakadon, is there another recommendation that you'd like to move, or should we go back to number 8?
That's perfectly fine with me if Dr. Byra is ready. If she would prefer, I can do one of my items either way.
Okay. I'm good.
Okay, so number 8 is a discussion consideration possible action regarding application approval methodology. Dr. Byra.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, full disclosure, I'm new here, so bear with me, guys, if I mess up how we're supposed to go about staff. But it's been kind of on my mind prior to coming on the board, the length of our meetings, and a lot of the length of our meetings goes to the review of the applications, right? Obviously, everything needs to be reviewed, but in terms of how we review them on the meeting, I would like to suggest parity with how we are doing this with managed care organizations. We're looking at credentialing, which is with what they call either like a clear list or a clean list. So we trust the reviewers to do the review process. Our committee members go through it. We make a list that says there was no problems with applicants, you know, 1 through 10. But if there is an issue or discussion, then we put those on a discussion list. So instead of everyone reading out loud where they went to school, who their advisor was, total number of hours, as long as it meets the criterion, they automatically get added to that clean list. We then move to, you know, push on those clean list members and then open up discussion, any of those that we took issue with as they were reviewing. So this is in alignment with, it's through the National Committee for Quality Assurance. Sorry, that's the parity that I'm referencing there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Ms. Denton. And maybe this is for Ms. Galvin and board staff. If we were to move forward with like a clean list, this would the clean list need to be posted on the agenda for who is on the clean list?
Ms. Galvin.
Go ahead.
You know, I'm thinking of this from, you know, a fairly consistently with what I'm with how Ms. Galvin is, I'm sure. I'm thinking about it specifically, you know, how can we facilitate without violating open meeting laws and, you know, ex parte communications potentially flying around and so forth. And I'm sort of formulating my thoughts and talking out loud at the same time. So what I see the potential for is that the lead reviewer can come to the meeting and indicate, we want the record to reflect a substantive review of the application was done. And so if the lead reviewer can state that it is their position that this is a clean application, you know, based on a substantive review, this is a clean application, are there any questions or dissensions or comments, then that is maybe a compromise or maybe some middle ground. Maybe that facilitates what you're suggesting, Dr. Byra, while still at the same time, you know, creating an efficiency in the form of, you know, there isn't an articulation of, you know, what is really in the substance of the application, but there's clear acknowledgement and there would be a consensus still that the application is administratively and substantively complete. So it would shave off many seconds, a minute perhaps, per application. And I think we would still be within the spirit of the requirement, but that's for Ms. Galvin to agree with or shoot me down as she sometimes does.
I would not shoot you down. I think your compromise is reasonable. I will say that all committee members have an obligation to substantively review all applications. Then it is the lead committee member's responsibility to articulate the substantive review. And if any member or the committee member points out any issues, then they will need to be addressed by the entire committee. I appreciate Dr. Byra's suggestion, maybe alternatives that can make the process more efficient. But Heidi is correct. If we had this clean list that individual board members, you know, would add to, you know, names of applicants, you could get into an open meeting law issue. And I'm sure just like, you know, Dr. Davey noted, you know, it was late last night when he was reviewing all the applications and some members, you wouldn't be able to, you know, update that clean list until, you know, hours perhaps before the meeting. But I think Heidi's suggestion that at the meeting, the lead committee member can say, I substantively reviewed the application thoroughly, reviewed the application, I found no issues. And then you could proceed that way, and that would not violate the open meeting law. And all members would still have the responsibility to review all applications thoroughly.
Dr. Davey?
Yeah. Welcome to the team again, Dr. Byra. And I appreciate the process discussion here, right? And I think that anytime we get a chance to take a look at the process, staying within our administrative rules, I think is a great step forward. So I have a couple of different comments. One, you know, in terms of documentation for this agenda item, and I think it needs to go roll to the next one, I would like to kind of see what the thoughts are around what this clean sheet would look like, right? Like what would be the areas that, you know, as individuals that have taken a look at these applications, like kind of like things that pop up, right? Like, for example, we had a couple situations today, just missed check boxes, situation where perhaps there's a licensee whose hours didn't quite add up because there's a question around, or an applicant whose hours don't quite add up because of something we see with one of the supervisors. You know, all of this, like if it's kind of a decision tree you're thinking, right, and it's a bunch of yes, yes, yeses, and then all of a sudden the no kind of kicks it out, I'd be interested to see kind of like what's in your brain and what your thoughts are around that. Given that you listen to enough of these meetings and now you'll start to kind of dive in, that at worst case, it becomes a job aid for other members of this committee, or even in terms of sharing back with Ms. Malice as a job aid of like the things that the committee constantly looks for, right? And so I don't think we should just say no thank you. I think we should continue maybe down some of this discussion around process improvement and see what's there. The other comment I would make is probably on my own vacuous verbal behavior around each of the applications, right? Like, so I typically start off that this person's coming forward with, you know, seeking licensure and rattle off a bunch of stuff around their education or around their supervisors. It's my understanding none of that is really required. We do that out of some form of a deference or to respect the individual who's coming forward and say a few words about them. But I do think that that also could be something that we looked that is somewhat tightened up in terms of, you know, almost scripted, that there's, you know, three areas that we mentioned about this person are the most critical. And then it's like, and then yes, would like to move this forward. You know, again, if that saves us, you know, moments over time is, you know, when we have 60 applications or 40 applications, those at 30 seconds adds up. And, you know, I think those of that have been on the committee for a while recognize that and are looking for ways to improve it. And so I think some, you know, some scripts, some guidance to any and all of us, I think would be a good step forward.
Dr. Byra?
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Davey, for your comments. You know, I think it is a two-part process. One, you know, the review process itself, but I think in terms, like, the reason I put on the agenda was for the part that you spoke secondly to, just in terms of the amount of time that we spend reviewing those who we don't have issue with. I understand that wanted to, you know, pay some homage to their education, but I guess to be frank, if I'm the one who's waiting for my license, if me being talked about of where I did my schooling and who was my advisor and how many hours is going to prohibit me from getting my application done this month versus getting bumped to the next meeting, I'm in the boat of like Dr. Kristen Byra meets all the requirements, like on to the next, just for, you know, efficiency. I know this morning, you know, our agenda, we're moving very quickly today in comparison to other meetings that I've listened to or been on. But I do know another issue that comes up is that we don't get to complaints quickly, that we are, you know, kind of months behind of when they come in and what we get to address them. And I know part of that is because when you have 40 applicants to go through, we have to save time for that, right? So how do we balance how much time we can devote to resolving complaints and how much time can we devote to resolving all these licensures that applications that come in? And so I'm hoping to solve that disconnect by reducing how much time we are spending on the ones that we find to be, you know, no issue and to move on and recommend them to the board. I guess that's my point of where I'm trying to I guess, whittle down the time, because they do, minutes do add up rather quickly.
Ms. Denton?
So I would like to acknowledge, first off, that I'm excited that maybe Dr. Davey was also up until 2 a.m. last night reviewing all applications. Like maybe that's a thing. But secondly, I do think that the decision tree type of process, like I'd love it. Like I think that would be absolutely fantastic. My question that I asked earlier to board staff and Ms. Galvin, as far as like if that clean list would need to be articulated before the meeting and going on the agenda, you know, came down to the open meeting laws. And would we need to articulate that ahead of time? And if that would then cut down on the amount of time that, you know, perhaps some of us who have full schedules have, like, from the time that the materials are posted until when we have to present at the meeting. But, you know, if Ms. Pakanon's recommendation would meet the requirements of that open meeting law, like I like the idea. I think that it's, I think it's definitely a potential to shorten our meetings, which I will not complain about.
Let's see, Ms. Pakanon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it really could be as simple and straightforward as, you know, I, as the lead, you know, I find this application to be administratively and substantively complete, you know, unless any other members identify, you know, an issue, my recommendation would be to move this forward. It could be that simple and that succinct. And in doing so, you know, you are absolutely affirming, you know, that staff did what they are required to do with respect to, you know, processing an application to administrative completedness. And you're also doing your job that you are tasked with, which is the substantive review. So I think that the script could be, you know, that simple and that succinct if that's the direction you decide to go in. Mm-hmm.
All right. Any other comments? Ms. Pakenham, Ms. Galvin, as far as where we're at right now, how might we move forward, or do we need further discussion about this in the future agenda items, or?
I guess my question to the committee would be, do you want to task me, Zakiya, with outlining this process and sending it out and then doing test driving it for the March meeting to see how effective that is? If it, we find it to be, you know, not working on any level from either a logistics perspective, a legal perspective, you know, we can change that. But, you know, maybe we outline it and we practice and we modify as needed. Is that palatable?
Yeah, Dr. Byrie, you brought this forth. What are your thoughts at this point on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to push anyone into a place where they feel uncomfortable, and I certainly want to be in compliance with the meeting. So I obviously trust Ms. Pakenham will be able to guide us in that direction. So, I mean, if there's a way to, I think beta testing is always a great spot to be in when we're testing new processes. And so if there's a way to, you know, not adopt it fully and we can test it and make modifications as needed, I'm on board, but I don't want to force anyone's hand if any other committee members like the traditional way of doing so.
I'm happy to explore this for sure. So yeah,
thank I'm you all about that. Crushing tradition.
All right. So Ms. Pakenham, I guess to answer your question, yeah, if something could be drafted and we could maybe look, test it in March, if there is time, that's the other issue is putting the strain on board staff resources as well. If that's able to be done, great. If not, then we could maybe look at April as well. But
well, and you know, I'm as guilty as anyone that you know, this may take I'm suggesting this might take a few months, you know, for adaptation, you know, purposes, and you know, it's very easy to sort of slip into, you know, those habits that we've practiced for a long time. So let's just see, you know, how the next month or two unfolds. There may be some other, you know, efficiencies that we can try to explore with respect to, you know, grouping applicants in the assignment process. I'll need to get with Zakiya and have that discussion with her just in case there are some complications that I'm not thinking of. But you know, it may be that the agenda becomes reflective of, you know, in a Dr. Davey has, you know, a certain sequence of applications, and, you know, that can sort of be addressed pretty efficiently. And then we move on to Ms. Denton's and so forth.
Okay. Dr. Byra.
So on the applications themselves as well, I know there was issues with the software. They were capturing data from one field and putting it into, the wrong field. Is there a way to get access to the software folks? I'm just thinking along the lines of if there are things that we know, like a checkbox wasn't done, like, can we set those to required? Like, I think there's some ways from like a user experience component that would, I think, also cut down on time for committee members that you just can't pass go. If it's a required field, you can't move past that. I'm not familiar with the software system that they have, but most softwares like that can be set with required text or even internal flags that if you did select yes to utilizing, drugs and alcohol, then you do have to make a required response explanation. So same thing, that would be something so that Dr. Davies not chasing down people at 2 o'clock in the morning to determine why that was left unchecked. I just think from if we're going tip to tail of how to make this process, more efficient for everyone involved, licensees included, right? If they're not getting a permanent product of what their application looked like, they can't check it. And if there's not internal either flags, required texts, and things like that, then it's also just hindering them to be able to submit a complete application. So Dr. Pack and I'm not sure if that would be an opportunity. I'm happy to volunteer my time to meet. I do have a bit of a tech background because I build clinical decision models and clinical intelligence forms for a living. So I'd be happy to meet with software folks to see what options we could incorporate so that we are getting the most complete and accurate application across our desk, as opposed to at least chasing down some of those items. And I'm just also wondering if there would be ways for us to see flags as it comes across so that we're kind of getting that sorted a bit more eloquently than just reviewing mountains of paperwork, if that makes sense.
Dr. Davey?
Yeah, I'd say one thing that I had on the list that I struggle with every time we go through the applications is the non-uniformity of like what is put in front of me from one application to the next. So sometimes we get like the online portion that has the view on the left-hand side of all the drop-downs. Sometimes it's like we get an output push report. Sometimes we obviously get the paper version of some things. And so, even just thinking about if we're going to take on some process improvements in the coming months, thinking about like when that information comes, like I'm looking at a particular application right now that was done online, there is such a significant amount of white space on the pieces of paper. And this is not, I'm not necessarily looking at one that's like the online application printout. I'm also looking at one that looks like it's more of the output from the online application. There's so much white space that I end up having to like bounce between 17 pages to get to like some of the points. And quite honestly, I missed the paper version. I'm going to be very honest. That was just succinct. It was a scanned up PDF and I could roll through it and knew where everything was. Where in pieces now of like the online version, you can continue to kind of add additional employers, keep adding lines. And then, so sometimes it's like what I'm looking for is on page 4. The next time it's on page 8, the next time it's on page 2, some of that leads to some inefficiency on my part. And I'm saying this personally that I in terms of like creature of habit, if the documentation for every single licensee looked or application was somewhat cohesive, and so I shouldn't say it's not cohesive now, but I guess more in line application after application, it may speed up some of the process on the front end, not in this particular committee call, but allowing me to get through, this one wasn't bad. I only had to review 20 applications, but yes, I was more focused on the complaint beginning of the week, getting through all that documentation. So yes, last night was when I got finally to the applications, typically because I know the flow of what those looks like. They're not, I can get through them in a timely fashion. Whereas I never quite know where an investigation may lead me. And so, yeah, I think if we could just maybe look at cleaning up some of that stuff, if possible. Thank you.
Ms. Pakenham?
Yeah, I'll try to respond to both Dr. Byra and Dr. Davey. So Dr. Byra, absolutely, there's always opportunities, to request system improvement. So when we launched the application, we knew that we had done, we think, a pretty decent job, hopefully a good job, of identifying, you know, the requirements of an application. It's a very daunting task to take, you know, requirements that are reflected in a PDF and then, you know, effectively translate each and every one to a system, because there's sort of this realization at some point, oh yes, you know, there was a field in that application that had some meaning and provided, you know, informed something. And so, you know, by virtue of having it changed and assimilated into a system, it's lost, it's less effective, or whatever the case. So we have had, you know, some time and opportunity to say, okay, you know, we overlooked something, you know, we need a change request made, and so forth. So what I'm thrilled about, even if it doesn't happen as nearly as fast as we would want it to, but we actually have a software vendor who's responsive. We actually have a software vendor who will tell us, you know, we will make changes for you. There's a process. Sometimes there's a charge. Sometimes, you know, a change request requires an investment of, you know, developer time and testing and so forth. And so we have to pay for that. So that's all understood. You get this, of course. And so, you know, in my mind, we are constantly improving the application. There's still always opportunities to make it better. So, you know, having someone who's willing to sort of sit with us and say, I see an opportunity for a process improvement. I see an opportunity to capture something, you know, here or there. That would be fantastic. You know, staff can document those things, and then we can take them, you know, to the vendor and say, you know, these are really important changes, or, you know, we ask you to prioritize these now. We'll cover, you know, the cost of these. We'll address the cost of the, you know, the less impactful ones later, whatever the case may be. So the potential is absolutely there. And in our past, we haven't always been able to say that. So I'm thrilled about that aspect. So you and I should spend some time together with the application. And you're going to see an example of kind of what I'm talking about, you know, in a short time. To Dr. Davies' point, oh my gosh, yes, you know, we know that this has been, you know, there hasn't been uniformity in what is presented to the committee and to the board. And so there have been instances where, you know, we've said, look, this is an unacceptable presentation. This is an unacceptable output. We need this to change. And so the vendor will make that change. Not necessarily, you know, perfect in our eyes, but better. And so that's good. There are also system changes that push something to production, and we only find out about it when, you know, we find out about it. We really don't understand what that looks like, or even know what happened until, you know, suddenly Z or Kathy observes something that's different. And, you know, how do they have to pivot? How do they have to change? Dr. Davey, absolutely. I know it's been, you know, it's been daunting, you know, at times to sort of, you know, make this leap into this world. But, you know, concrete and specific examples about, you know, where your pain points are, the vendor listens to those, and they really do give it, you know, some thought and attention when they can to, you know, improve our experience too. We have always felt that whether we were talking about the failed former system or this one, you know, we've always tried to put a big emphasis on it isn't just the applicant's user experience. That output is so critical, you know, in terms of what it looks like, how it presents, how it's organized, how that information is consumed. It seems that we are, you know, beating on that message constantly. This vendor gets it on some level, but I think they still sort of struggle to really appreciate the importance with which, you know, we place on that responsibility and what they need to produce for us. So I am not afraid to keep leaning in and insisting that they do better. You know, specific examples, if, you know, you want to show us two applications side by side and say, you know, this changed and this is the problem, that I'm experiencing from my perspective, we may be able to say, yeah, we know that was a universal change that surprised us too, or hey, you know, we see that this has degraded. And so we need to talk to the vendor about it and tell them that they need to either revert or change this or whatever. So, you know, please give us your feedback and we'll keep supplying it back to the vendor.
Ms. Denton.
I would like to say that over the last several years that I've been on this committee, like, we have seen substantial improvements in the review process. And I do want to articulate, board staff, while there may be ways to improve the process, it certainly does not mean when I say I would love something, that I do not appreciate all of the improvements that have been made. And to just entirely contradict Dr. Davey, I do not want the paper form back. I enjoy being able to copy and paste to a separate, like when I've got my big monitor up, I've got one page and I can copy and paste dates here and I can go over here and pull this. So just to note, please don't give me back a paper form. Thank you.
Dr. Davey.
Well, fine. You don't have to have that. I was using it as a point of reference of quickly getting through. One other thing, just, you know, Heidi, as you talk back to the vendor, even what about online access for those of us that are reviewing to be able to review the applications inside of their system, right? I would wonder, you know, you guys download everything, put it into a PDF, throw it into a Google Drive. Like, seems a lot of, you know, redundancy, a lot of work on your end administratively, that if there was the reviewers or the committee's ability to log into the system and go through the process there and view things there and even capture notes there, you know, that seems to be would also cut out a lot of the work on your end of managing what the system that we pay a lot of dollars for is supposedly to manage.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey. So that is a thing we can give board, committee members, my neighbor. We can give anybody access to this system and restrict or, you know, allow what we want them to see and not see and so forth. So that's absolutely, you know, a possibility. We could do that tomorrow. What I'd like to do is sort of think about this and strategize around it. What we'd want to do is we'd want to do, you know, some show and tell time, I think, just so you can see what that experience looks like. And so, you know, to do that, we'd really have to set up, you know, for confidentiality purposes, we'd have to do it in our testing environment, you know, put in a fake application, make up stuff, you know, and that's no problem. We can definitely do that. That doesn't require an abundance of time. And then we would demonstrate to you what you would have to do, you know, to navigate through application content. That's something that Zakiya, our subject matter expert, would, you know, need to lead you on so you can see, you know, where does she go to find the information that, you know, someone has, you know, their academic credentials, where are all, you know, the training documents, you know, where do you find all the declaration questions and so forth. We want you to see that. We want you to see what she experiences and what she manages, whether or not you find that, you know, an improvement or palatable. You know, let's have that conversation. We've been reticent to kind of open that door and go down that path with everyone until we really got proficient and we really understood, you know, how to, and we really redefined all of our workflows. So, you know, let's give you all a chance to sort of, you know, peek behind the curtain and see, you know, what we do and what we manage and so forth. And maybe in the process, you know, we find that that's an improved solution over, you know, someone cobbling together Frankenstein style, I guess, you know, bits and pieces of content that come into, you know, our into being through, you know, various ways, And then Zakiya assembles it in the nicest possible package she can and sends it to you. Maybe what you're suggesting is the better solution, and we won't know that until you experience it. So we need to facilitate that experience.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Byer. So I think we have a plan moving forward. Ms. Pakanon, you and Dr. Byra will discuss some things and we'll. Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think that's the first step. So we'll get together and look at the system, you know, with a critical eye. And I'm also hearing that we need to outline sort of a new process for substantive reviews. And in the meantime, Zakiya and I need to be thinking about how do we create what I'm now describing as a show and tell experience for you to sort of see the content from a different perspective and tell us this is better, it's not better, or, you know, maybe we, just by virtue of you seeing it, we arrive at a new solution and everyone agrees it's the perfect one.
All right. Okay, so let's move on. Updates from the BACB, Ms. Pakanon.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So the BACB did have three updates for us since the last one. The communication sent on January 26th includes an explanation and some helpful screenshots relative to looking for disciplinary actions on their website. And so what I noted in the memorandum is that, you know, from the staff perspective, this is, you know, this will be helpful, I think, in the sense that as a complaint is received, you know, we can check to see whether there's any related information concerning that certificate. I find it pretty easy to identify, you know, which actions taken by the BACB were specific to individuals in our jurisdiction. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of crossover. You know, many of the actions taken against RBTs would not be germane, you know, to this board, for instance. But anyway, I've supplied this to Zakiya and Jennifer, you know, and asked them to be really mindful of using this information to help inform, you know, the committee on really any matter concerning any individual that comes before you. The BACB will do an annual report. They assemble all of the conversations that are held by email, exchanged by the regulators among the regulators, and exchanged with BACB regulatory staff on the exchange. So they package that all nicely and provide it to us at the conclusion or after the conclusion of every year. You can use that document and do a control F search if you're interested in looking for, you know, any particular search term, whether it be Arizona or, you know, whatever it is. So all that information is available for you to review and reference if you need. And then finally, there was a little update relative to the regulator meeting being held on March 7. Do you have any questions or comments about anything in this update?
No, I don't think so. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. And then Ms. Pakanon on agenda item 10, the legislation updates.
Yes. So you have the report for the week ending February 2nd today. That was supplied, I believe, did I upload it in that in your folder yesterday? Yes. So you had initially the one ending January 26th. And now, as of yesterday, the one ending today. Generally, there's no legislative activity on a Friday, so I can prepare these late on Thursday, and that's reflective of, you know, the encompassing all the activity for the week. If you were comparing and contrasting the list from last week to this week grew significantly. I think at this time, because so much of the, so many of these bills, they haven't even been first read in the chamber that of introduction. Monday was a deadline for Senate bills to be filed. And so there was just this explosion of bills in the early part of the week and, you know, very difficult to keep up with. So I don't really want to comment on those quite yet. The House deadline is Monday, and so those bills are still coming in. So it's, I think, the lengthiest list that I've prepared for this committee and for this board. But really, in terms of bills advancing and action and so forth, there's just a few. You know, this committee, I think, maybe has some level of interest. Of course, our two board members are interested in House Bill 2050. But just, you know, for purposes of updating the committee and the public, this bill makes proposes some revisions that in many ways eliminate what are really unnecessary hurdles for qualifying for licensure just for psychologists. And also finally identifies a title for the supervised temporary license holders. So those individuals who are completing their training while under supervision. So, you know, small impact in some ways, but it's, you know, it will make all the difference. These changes will make all the difference to the people who can avail themselves of really some application efficiencies. So that bill did pass out of committee. We did have two members that voted against it, but they will vote against any bill that, you know, really is supported by or involves a regulatory board. So this is the best possible outcome that we could have had in committee. The bill that everyone most cares about, I think, in this environment is House Bill 2068. That is the one that would establish the Independent Board of Behavior Analysts. So you, I'm sure, read my email update shortly after the Regulatory Affairs Committee review. This was a surprise, pleasant surprise outcome going into that committee review. The vote was expected to be much closer. So a 5-1 vote is pretty, pretty amazing. There's universal agreement that that was the most daunting of all the potential hurdles that this bill would face. So it will next go to House Health and Human Services, I'm guessing a week from this coming Monday, but it could be even a few meetings, one or two meetings later. So it will face what I'm sure is, you know, more support. I would be shocked if that committee doesn't advance this bill, you know, with a supportive vote. So I'm very impressed, I think, with how AZ ABA and their lobbyist team have represented this bill and what they've achieved with it. So do you want me to pause there just for comments or questions? I'm just going to spot touch on a few others, but I certainly won't be talking about everything else.
Any questions or comments for Ms. Pakkanen at this time?
I would just have a comment that would second what Ms. Pakkanen said. I don't know if we've got any AZ ABA representatives here today, but you know, it is certainly appreciated, the efforts of AZ ABA and the individuals who are assisting in that lobbying effort to ensure that we have, you know, not just a board of our own, but because we have grown to a point of self-regulation, and also looking at the support that board staff will have with the appropriate staffing and resources to get things done faster. So it's not just about improving our process. You know, there are some resources that are needed in order to improve that process. So that's my comment. It's exciting. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Denton.
I had one other thought. Now it eludes me, but at any rate, plenty of opportunities, you know, in the future, I'm sure, to keep talking about this bill. It's not an easy thing to say, trust me, this bill doesn't create more government. Really, this bill isn't, you know, expanding the footprint of government. This isn't creating more regulation. That's a hard thing, you know, to impart, you know, to convince someone. So, but I thought everyone did a really great job on Wednesday, you know, advancing that message and making the point. So. Just quickly on House Bill 2100, because it's actually, it's speeding to the floor. This is the bill that I think what everyone's focused on is the benefit of providing transparency, requiring the boards to provide transparency about application requirements, qualifications for licensure in a very transparent way on the website. It doesn't say that, you know, it must be in front of a login. It just says on the website. So, you know, I think an agency could make the case, well, it's there. You just have to create your free account in the system and then you can see everything. But we do better than that. I think we actually comply really well already with the intent and the spirit of this provision in the bill. We're still going to do a very critical look and make sure that, you know, can we do better? Can we be more transparent? And one of the things that we can definitely improve upon is that we don't necessarily provide complete clarity as to what precisely will you be asked in the declaration questions. And so I think that's something that we need to just say, time out, let's look at that. Are we really telling prospective applicants upfront, you know, you need to be prepared to answer these questions after you create your account, you start going through the application process. So, you know, be thinking about these questions, how you will answer them, and what information you need to be prepared to supply to them. So I think that's an area that we need to really stop and look at. This bill hasn't passed, but and it won't go into effect until 90 days after the conclusion of the session. It doesn't mean that we can't, you know, make these improvements today in the spirit of, you know, transparency and, and also informing the public that, hey, we ask these questions. We gather this information. The piece about this bill that is still really unsettling to me is that I feel, and this is me, the problem is me. I feel that the line is so blurred between administrative completedness requirements and the substantive completedness requirements. And I think this bill, it doesn't help me, you know, draw a line of demarcation between the two. And maybe that's just something that I have to live with and get over and, you know, sort of deal with and, you know, come up with a solution for. So I'm still sort of, my brain is still working on this bill, and I'm hoping for the epiphany someday that I really understand, assuming it passes. Clearly it has a lot of support. I really hope I'm prepared to implement the provisions of this bill if it passes and if it's signed. So I'll keep working on it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And then the other one, Dr. Davey, did you have a comment about the House Bill 2187, Health Professionals Title Use Prohibitions?
Yeah.
This was scheduled for Health and Human Services hearing, and then it was struck. I need to look really quick to see if it's being held. Will you indulge me while you do that?
Yeah, it was just an interesting bill of, like, restriction of the use of, like, doctor, you know, in terms of, like, a DR in front of your name. And so I was really thinking more along the lines of psychologist. I mean, not that there's not, on this call alone, there's several doctorate level behavior analysts, but it just seemed like a very interesting title protection that was geared towards mainly, you know, MDs, period, end of story. And so I, not only for this group, but also thought for the psychologist that might be of interest just to kind of monitor whatever comes of it. But just thinking about people's auto signatures or people that just even refer to someone when they see a PhD as doctor, that would require a lot of education across the system if something like that was truly adopted at the title level. And so I just flagged it as something that was interesting and wanted to make sure it was on your watch list to see what happens with it.
Oh, it is on the list. I think that one of the questions, and I hope it does get a hearing, because I think it's going to illuminate our understanding, pretty significantly. What is the intent? What problem does it solve? I think that, once we understand that better, it should make better sense to us. When I saw this bill, I thought, okay, I don't see anything in here that I think would, suppress any of our licensees from, using a title that they've earned, to which, they are entitled, all the things. What it does say is that you are to use the title that your statutes prescribe. And remember how I keep saying that there isn't a prescribed title for behavior analysts? Have you heard me say that before? If not, I'm saying it today. So it's just something that's curious, just to sort of think about. I really want to hear. The sponsor is the vice chair of that committee. So I'm paying attention to when this bill does get a hearing, paying attention to, if there are any amendments that sort of address, what you were saying, Dr. Davey, or, anything else, because, anytime a bill has this broad impact on many professions, the professions are going to come forward and say, well, for us, and then this is our thing, and have you thought about, because in our world, all those things start to happen. And so, those conversations are probably being held with the sponsor. House Bill 2308, this is a bill that would prohibit a board from denying a license for a criminal offense if the criminal offense has nothing to do with the practice of the profession. So, that being said, I can't think of an instance where, this board, if this were a statute, enacted in statute today, I can't think of, any instance where the board did that or would have done that. The fact of the matter is that, criminal conduct is always going to tie back to, in some way, the ethics and so forth. So I think it would be virtually impossible, in my mind anyway, to sort of think of many instances of criminal convictions that have, are so unrelated to an application so as to, compel, this board to make a decision that, that would really run afoul of this statute. So I don't see it being super impactful, but regulatory affairs, gave it a unanimous vote. So I see this bill passing. And I think the House Bill 2471, this one is interesting to me. This would make rulemaking extremely daunting, because if the legislature has to approve every single rulemaking, then this just means, lots of delays, lots of denials. So, this really will have, this will suppress, a lot of rulemaking changes that agencies are able to make. We'll see how much steam this bill continues to present as it moves forward. It cleared its committee of introduction and both committees, actually. It came back on recon. So it has passed regulatory affairs. So we'll see where it goes from here. And I think that's all I have. All the Senate bills are sort of pacing behind the House bills. So. Okay. The other piece that I wanted to talk about, Mr. Chair, for this agenda item is the fund sweep issue. So just to tell you what I know and what I don't know. What we're looking at this time is a proposal. It's a budget proposal issued by the governor's office recommending fund sweeps that certain agencies, not just 90-10, you know, self-supporting, fee-accepting, self-funded agencies like ours. There are some other funds that are purporting to be for funds to be transferred from, but it hasn't been since 2009 that this idea has been floated as a possible solution, a partial solution to address the general fund deficit of revenues versus expenses. It's controversial, of course, you know, depending on who you ask. This is only a proposal again at this time. So what little I've heard from, you know, in terms of legislators' reactions are, you know, we don't really like to take funds from the 90-10 boards. They don't like to hear from their constituents who pay fees into their regulatory board, be they a behavior analyst or a nurse or a cosmetologist or what have you. So it was a very unpopular policy decision that was made in 2009, so much so there was litigation over it. And so, you know, the fact that these conversations are being held and this proposal is being made, you know, that illustrates, you know, the dire nature of, you know, and all potential solutions being on the table. What is curious to me is that the way that it's published in the report, the entire balance, 1.4 million that is being proposed to be swept from this agency appears to be targeted to just the funds paid by psychologists. It does not appear to reflect any funds in the behavior analyst sub-fund, program fund. Take it to the bank. I don't think that that's necessarily going to be, you know, the final solution, the final strategy, just because the behavior analyst fund is smaller and it's a sub-fund of the larger agency. I don't think it's immune from being touched. And I think that's pretty much a shared perspective. I could make the case that if the behavior analyst fund comes through this process unscathed, then there's still plenty of money to fund an investigator. However, all of our funding requests for fiscal year 24 were denied. So we will not have an investigator unless there is, you know, some sort of a compromise made, maybe through the auspices of House Bill 2068. I don't know. There's so many unknowns and there's just so many possibilities. It's so early. You know, proposals change, and some take a different form. Some get traction, some get don't. So it's something that I have to be constantly watching and constantly vigilant about. So, AZABA, from a advocacy perspective, they're all very aware of this issue. I've had some discussions with their lobbying team, and they lived through the 2009 sweeps. With me. So, you know, we all understand what this involves and what this means. So we'll just continue to keep watching it and informing the committee and the board.
All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate that. And thanks for the updates as the news breaks. So,
yeah, I appreciate the email updates as well. Breaking news. Thank you for that.
I'm sorry. There's so many.
No, don't be sorry. It's good to know what's going on. So,
thank you for reading them.
Let's see. Okay, so moving on to agenda item 12, behavioral analyst telehealth registry updates. Ms. Mouse, would you, and Dr. Byer, I'll just one moment. And Ms. Mouse, would you provide us with a word for the CEs?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The next code word is Romeo.
Romeo. Okay. All right. And then Dr. Byra, did you?
I was just hoping we could maybe just have like a 2-minute comfort break. That'd be possible. Well,
how about if I give you even better than that? Let's go with a 5-minute. Is that okay. Long enough for everybody? Okay.
So that'd be super.
Yeah. We'll reconvene at 55. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
I should have thought about this earlier, but we could. We just have a couple of items left, but we could go to 13 next. It could have been a really nice segue to go from, you know, the discussion about the substantive review of applications, since this is a closely related item where I'm actually going to do a little demo. So we can do that next if you want, or, you know, stay in order and have, I think we just need to do 12 and 13, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, let's go ahead and do, you suggested doing 13?
Yeah, if the committee is, you know, dying to see this, sure.
Yeah, let's do it. And then we don't need quorum for this, so we could get started with, if Dr. Davey hasn't returned, or do we need to wait? We need to wait. Okay. Dr. Davey? All right. So let's see. Let's go ahead and start with agenda item number 13. Ms. Pakenham.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So when you last discussed this item, it's been a couple of months. We unveiled a modified form that was augmented to really enhance the multiple supervisors at one location form, because we saw the potential that, and saw the need, frankly, that a form needed to better capture all of the information you would need to know relative to whether supervision was the supervised experience that an applicant received met all the requirements of our statutes, of course, and the BACB. And so, you know, that form really, I think a lot of thought and effort went into it. It came to the committee. The committee gave really good input and feedback into it and improved it, I think, substantially. So, what I'm going to show is that we have what is, in my mind, the short-term solution for how an applicant will use this form, and how it will be supplied, you know, through the portal. And then eventually what we want is for every field on that form to be incorporated into the application itself. So to me, this is just a bridge solution until we figure out a way to, you know, to operationalize this. And I'm sure there's going to be a cost associated with that, but that's fine. We are prepared to take that on. So does everyone see my screen? It's orange and white.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. So this is an applicant. I'm a fake applicant. Don't judge me here. I suffer enough as it is. So I'm logging in to my application, and I've said this before, what I really love about this system is that these are fake applications I will never ever submit. So anyway, I can navigate to where I have started an application and finish it. But what I love is that every time it's going to take me to the instructions page. So if anything ever eludes me as an applicant, the first time, the second time I've read it, maybe by the sixth time I've read it, you know, it will resonate. And so, you know, I love that they see this every time, but it's the supporting documents section that we ended up putting this form, only because it was the lowest level of effort to place it. Ideally, it would have been in the supervised sites and supervisors section. It will be there someday, but again, what I'm showing you is just this interim solution. So, you know, supporting documents, and maybe the applicants, you know, maybe they won't see this as sort of any sort of critical flaw. I mean, they're just going to see this is stuff I have to supply. The asterisk means they need it. And so, you know, I'm dutifully going to supply it. So, you know, the citizenship form and so forth, the photograph, I've just uploaded some junk there just, you know, for purposes of meeting the, you know, answer this question requirement. But here it is now, this new edition, the supervised experience summary form. So they navigate then to the behavior analyst application page. Well, they're supposed to be able to. And then they find the form. And we want them to do this. This is intentional. We want them to do the to find the section and to read all of this. Hold on, where did I find it? Supervised experience summary form. So we force them again to read all of this content, just so, you know, if anything again eludes them before, they read it again and it will resonate and then they comply. But then they go to the form and it's downloadable. Hold on. Probably not ready yet. There we go. So because you wanted this to be in Excel, so it would auto calculate the values, we kept it in Excel. We didn't convert it to a PDF. Are you still seeing this while the form opens? Or do I need to change my screen share?
We can see it.
Very good. Okay. So here's the form. And this instructs them to fill out every field that is germane to each and every supervisor. We provide, you know, a clear example. You know, we tell them that the application is not administratively complete until the form is completed and each and every document has been received concerning every supervisor. So the BACB registry printout, the license verification from, you know, the relevant state, from Nevada or whatever the case may be and so forth. So we put now all of this responsibility on the applicant to not only complete the form, check the value to make sure that it adds up to 1500 in the end. So it does a nice job of that. And then PDF the form, attach all of the other supporting documents that reflect all of the data that they supplied here, and then they upload it back on the system here under the supervised experience summary form. So then Zakiya will download the form, the completed form, you know, check to make sure it adds up to 1500. And those formulas are locked in. I don't think they can be tampered with. So you should be able to trust them. Feel free to, you know, check, to double check with your calculator. And then she will verify that the supporting documents that follow for every supervisor, that they are legitimate and they haven't been altered or tampered with in any way. And that will be her responsibility. So she will no longer be chasing down registry for printouts, or, you know, looking to New York is terrible. So daunting to find, I think, those registry printouts. So she will instead verify the authenticity of them. And of course, you know, as reviewers, substantive reviewers of applications, this is an exercise that you could also perform. So any thoughts, reactions, feedback to this process, which, you know, until it is integrated fully into the system and more effectively, we hope this will work.
Dr. Byra.
Thanks. So, I mean, seeing their asterisks there that it's required makes me think that it should be very easy for the system to make other things required as well, which is one of my suggestions earlier. I'm wondering here too, if I'm looking at this as a user, not as a reviewer, but as a user, when there's this question here needs to exceed 1500, I'm also wondering too, like, can we not give some feedback to the user? So like, now you've uploaded your form, like, did your total experience exceed, you know, meet or exceed 1500? If they say no, is there a way for us to give some feedback to the user as opposed to them just going on and submitting this? And then we come and then we say, hey, sorry, you know, it does say, even though you have your BACB certification, you don't meet the statute for the 1500. But since you don't, here are some steps you could take. Like Ms. Denton, you made a suggestion, like, have you been under the supervision of someone's, you know, post, you know, certification, so that they are not wasting all the time going through this process to just be told at the meeting, like, hey, we need some more documentation. I'm wondering from both standpoints, making it more efficient for us, but also for the licensee applicant, can we start giving them feedback as they go through this application?
So let me describe to you what the supervisor sites and supervisor section does right now. That doesn't mean that it needs to always be this way, because I think you're raising some interesting, you know, ideas. I haven't filled out in my application, I haven't filled out this section yet, but it is, it's a subset, only a subset right now, of everything that we want to know, right? And so this is what will be enhanced, you know, once we show Thentia the form and say, we're using this short term, you know, make this happen here. So when I'm adding my supervisors here, and we kind of apologize to applicants that, sorry, you will need to put a lot of data into this section that you already put into your form, you know, we understand that, and that redundancy, it just needs to happen right now. But, you know, if we get a lot of complaints, we get a lot of complaints, but so be it. So anyway, they go through this process and they complete this section. Again, asterisks are required. You know, we can't require certain fields, of course, because, you know, state licensure is, at least today. Right. So, this cannot be, you can't continue past this section, the supervisor sites and supervision sites and supervisor section, unless it adds up to 1500. And so I don't want to call him out, but, you know, a very recent applicant who, you know, applied with fewer than 1500 hours, we had to tell him, put something into, you know, create another entry, a second entry in which you acknowledge, you know, this isn't real, but I have to put in, you know, 750 here. So that's the solution today. But, you know, to your point, I see there's potential to modify this and to enhance it in the way that you described. So, I mean, I love these ideas, you know, capturing them and discussing them with the vendor, even if they can't do it, you know, 2 months from now, even if it's right, a year from now, you know, let's get these identified and submitted.
Can I ask who the vendor is? What software this is?
The company's Thentia. And so they are now, they've really proliferated, I will say, not just in the U.S. and Canada, but internationally, as the they'll tell you they're the leading software developer in the regulatory space. Okay. You know what I'm seeing. I would be. I'm not sure I could debate against that. I mean, they really are, establishing themselves as the solution in many, many states. Arizona boards almost universally are acquiring this platform. So, overall, I'm pleased. It's never perfect. It never will be. There have been unpleasant times and unpleasant words have been said, but this vendor has given us a high degree of confidence. They know our work, they respect what we do, and they want to bring us solutions. So any other thoughts or feedback about that now? So it's live in the system. So for all we know, there's an applicant working on this today, and you will see the applications presenting with those forms, followed in succession by all the supporting documentation for all their supervisors. What I hope will be the case is that the form becomes sort of your checklist as well, that maybe you will extract that and put it on one monitor. And then, that's how you check against everything else that the applicant supplied. So I hope that is a process improvement for all of you as well. You're nodding, you're encouraging me.
I think it definitely will be.
Okay, very good. Even for Dr. Davey, who's especially discerning. Okay, good.
I already gave you the thumbs up. You just missed it. Oh, you couldn't see my thumb, baby. There you go.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so anyway, we'll see, after it's implemented, I have no doubt, there'll be issues that we need to, resolve and tweak. So my suggestion would be, let's use this form for a few months. Until we're absolutely satisfied with it. And only then do we go to the vendor and say, okay, that page, that gets us most of the way, now use this form to get us all of the way. Great. Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah. Thanks, Ms. Pakkanen. All right. So we're going to go back to Item 12, action regarding behavioral analyst telehealth registry annual update. Ms. Malice, you're listed on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair. This telehealth individual, she was our first telehealth registry individual a year ago, and she's required to not renew her telehealth registry, but to update the board and committee on her documentation. Her telehealth her telehealth registry, it goes into perpetuity. So there's no expiration on that registry. So she's not required to renew it, but she is required to give us an annual update. So this individual did send us her documentation, mm-hmm. and that is what is in the folder.
Okay. All right.
So the way that we see this, staff will receive these annual updates, and we've designed a form, for intake purposes, and so we don't know how to do any substantive review of any of this information. And the statute is very silent with respect to, what, if anything, to do with the annual reports. I appreciate that the statute contemplates, there's some accountability, built into, you know, this very unique practice authorization that was, you know, created a couple of years ago. And so the board really, you know, gave some thoughtful discussion and felt as though, you know, let's bring these annual updates to the committee. If the committee identifies, you know, any concerns, any reason, you know, to do anything in particular, in this case, this committee will recommend to the board, you know, we open an investigation or, you know, we do something in particular. Staff just, we don't want to be in the position of, we accept these reports or these reports come to us and we don't do anything with them. So if this may just sort of end up being, to a large degree, this very perfunctory exercise that the committees do, CBA and ARC in the case of psychology, and then it goes on the consent agenda for the board, and you know, probably the board is going to, you know, just approve and not pull any of these off for any sort of, you know, review or discussion or possible action. But you know, I do want there to be a process where it's more than just staff saying, okay, we've got these reports and they're accumulating. And so, you know, we're doing what we're supposed to do, but there really isn't sort of any oversight. So hopefully that makes sense. We're just really dealing with implementing a statutory requirement that doesn't really give us a whole lot of any direction. Dr. Davey, I'm not sure if you want to add anything because you were in the board meeting.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot. I mean, is it just that we're going to just check the box and say, hey, they submitted it on time? I mean, really, we don't have any history. We don't have any guidance around it. I mean.
Right. There's no standards. There's no benchmark. You know, I mean.
And should we at least take a look at what was sent to us and say, you know, hey, congratulations, you maybe this will become the benchmark someday. I mean, it's without, you know, unless Gene feels like there is very clear guidance as to what to proceed with this, it's almost like an administrative function that it was submitted and the box is checked. Gene is shaking her head that I made sense for once today.
No, that's, I agree with that suggestion just because the committee always has so much on its agenda. I'd suggest the last time that this is something that staff could review, and if there were any issue at all or concern, they can consult with the chair, and if they thought it needed to go to the full committee, then that could take place. But there really isn't a standard, and you could look at, you know, putting something, you know, perhaps in a substantive policy statement that you might look for, but we have to be careful that that doesn't, you know, approach a rule, but it's sort of in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah,
and I think that I'm more concerned about, you know, what a behavior analyst report may reveal because of all the discussions around what the telehealth registry authorization, what that involves and what it does not involve. I don't know that you would ever get a report that gave you any clues that, okay, wait a minute, this person could very well be practicing, you know, more broadly than the statute really allows because they're providing supervision to a trainee. So, you know, I feel as more of a sense of more dutiful, I guess, for lack of a better term, that, you know, the committee's review of these reports is essential. I don't know if you can see, you know, look at a report and discern, you know, anything in particular. And it may be that you see something where it raises, you know, the question or the specter of that possibility. And so you want us to get more information. And maybe we can and maybe we can't. You know, we need to have that. We need to have legal counsel, I guess, you know, inform us. We do have the authority to open an investigation. So obviously, if someone in their annual update said, you know, well, Kentucky revoked my license, that's something we would want to pursue, right? I'm not sure that values in a spreadsheet, you know, inform us all that much. But my concern is that, you know, what if that type of activity is happening and we weren't paying attention. The clues were there in the report, and we just didn't catch them.
Dr. Davey?
So, I mean, I think there is the, I mean, there is in the statute that the report needs to be submitted with like X amount of information. I mean, I still think administratively, if that information's there, then it's a checkbox and like they submitted it. I mean, I don't see us doing much more than the administrative piece of it.
Right. I mean, if someone,
if you, I mean, if they said they worked over the number of the allotment, or if it flags to you based on what's actually in the statute, then obviously you would bring that forward. But it seems like it's like I look at it as like a renewal, right? You don't bring us renewals because if the renewal process is tracked, then it's administrative and the renewal's issued. Unless something like somebody's checked a new box that their license was suspended or that something significant has happened where you need to bring it. And I would just lean towards treating it like a renewal.
Okay. Whatever the committee directs us to do, that's what we will do.
Yeah.
So whatever agreement you arrive at, or consensus or vote, what we'll do.
My thought is that as long as, I mean, statute is advised on the data we collect and look at, and as Dr. Davey mentioned, it appears to be more like a renewal than anything. And so I think to an extent, I don't think we can exceed what the statute indicates. And so I would say that treating it more like the renewal, treating, you know, within the bounds of what they've said, I don't know if we can exceed that. So, but yeah. So, Ms. Packon, do we need a, or any other comments from committee members? I'll start there.
Can I just offer one more comment? I think that if someone failed to supply their annual report, they do receive reminders. I think if they fail to submit, that's an action that would require, necessitate, you know, your review. This is only the third telehealth registrant to come to reach their first 1 year anniversary, annual anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we will see it. It will happen.
Yeah. And then what level of action do we need to take as a committee, if any? Ms. Denton?
So my question would be here, you know, I think one of our largest concerns has been over the, you know, since we've been talking about the telehealth registry, is that they cannot provide supervision to a trainee. Is there something that, like, I'm looking at the behavior analyst telehealth registry annual report and the information that was supplied in here, do we ask if they have provided supervision to a trainee?
No, I think the statute prescribes what we are to ask. I know it does. Yeah. And so that's a question for Ms. Galvin. Can we ask questions beyond what the statute authorizes us to ask?
Yes, that would not be recommended. The statute gives you the framework within which you can, you know, seek information.
All right. Any other comments? And then Ms. Galvin or Ms. Packanon, what do we need to do moving forward as far as any action, or do we just accept what we've made the comments about?
Just articulate, if you would, what exactly you want us to do from this point forward. We will probably have not every month. Some months we'll have one, other months we'll have two reports. So it won't be many in the beginning, but as Z said, it's going to be cumulative. So your successors 20 years from now will be receiving an awful lot of reports. even though our application numbers are not extreme, this has been, we opened up the telehealth registry not quite 18 months ago. I know we are under 30 applicants, 17 or 18 authorizations have been granted. You know, when for various reasons, some haven't completed it or, you know, whatever. So the numbers aren't big now, but like a snowball, it will, you know, someday it will be a lot.
Well, if this is looking at this example here, I guess it's not an example, so it's an actual, but if this meets the requirements of statute, then I would say we just proceed with this and move forward.
So you do want to see these every month, just sort of, as they're submitted, just for a like a perfunctory approval, and then they go on the consent agenda with the board. Did I hear Dr. Davey instead say, because we're treating them as renewal, or they're so congruent to renewals, and you don't see all the renewals, you don't want to see these every month. We only bring them forward if we have some sort of question about the content or the legitimacy or something.
If there's no further approval needed, or as a committee, or as the board isn't required to approve this, I would contend that there isn't a need to look at these unless there is something of concern that's highlighted by board staff.
Okay. Perfect. Z is telling me the next one isn't until July, so let's all remember this in July.
Good luck.
Yeah, especially with me. All right, so next agenda item is new agenda items. Ms. Denton, is this in relation to agenda item number 14 or something else?
Yeah, number 14.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
Yeah, I waited.
Okay. I was busy looking off at the screen as I was talking, and so I did.
I was just on point.
Way to go. All right, so Ms. Denton.
I know this isn't the typical time that I ask for this, but I'd like to motion that we move to executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice.
For new business? I don't know that we can do that.
Can we do that outside of this? Like outside of application reviews?
So you would need a particular agenda item.
Okay.
To move into executive session. And I'm not sure how future agenda items would.
I think it comes down to looking at what would be an appropriate situation in which to open a complaint.
So that would require an agenda item in and of itself. And so if you can ask staff to put that on a future agenda item, and then we can move into executive session at that time in a future agenda.
That sounds great. So my concern is that we need to come back to Brittany Fletchner and Jason Silva for the potential of opening a complaint. You know, the concern that I have is that if they were behavior analysis trainees, that should have been articulated in their supervised experience. It does appear in the description of what they were doing that they have listed on their applications, that they were practicing in the capacity of a behavior analyst. So, you know, like I think we just need to come back and determine if we need additional documentation, if we should be opening a complaint.
You already granted them, or you recommended approval, did you not?
I did. And that was based upon, you know, like previous situations where if we had a concern, but they met the statutory requirements for holding a license, that we would go ahead and approve that. But if there is a concern about unlicensed practice after they had become certified, but not licensed.
So without kind of going back and opening these matters again that have already been referred to the board for approval, generally, if there is an applicant who may meet the qualifications in terms of education and experience, but you believe they have engaged in some sort of questionable potential unprofessional conduct, you would not grant them a license. You would investigate that concern further. And if it turned out to be true and there was some sort of unprofessional conduct, then you would move to deny that application because of your investigation and the evidence that you obtained proving that unprofessional conduct. So you would not want to make a recommendation to the board to approve, but then say, well, we're going to open a complaint because we believe that there was, they engaged in X, Y, and Z.
Okay.
Because it's kind of illogical to say, good, you're good to go. Not only have you met your training and education, but your conduct and all of this meets the standard. Grant them the license and then turn around and say, oh, but you did this, so we're going to open a complaint.
Okay. So question then for you, Ms. Gowden, what do we do now? What do I do now if this is a concern?
If you believe that there is a concern with those two individuals and there may have been some unlicensed practice, now would be the time to ask the committee to reconsider its recommendation to the board. And you could, you know, take back that recommendation and then make a new recommendation whether to table it, conduct more investigation, or make a recommendation to the board to deny. You could also, the recommendation to the board could just proceed as is, and Dr. Davey could note at the time of the board that there was one board member who had a concern that these individuals may have done X, Y, and Z, and ask the board to, you know, look at it at that time. My guess is the board would, you know, kind of defer to the committee to look at that concern and investigate it, you know, more thoroughly.
Can I have discussion at this point with fellow committee members? Like, is that?
Yeah, I would want to go back and reopen those two matters.
Okay.
So that we could have discussion, take, you know, reopening one at a time.
Okay. That is what I would like to do, so I can have some discussion surrounding that and see what my fellow committee members, you know, what decision might be made going through. So is it a motion that I need to make?
I think you ask just, you know, the chair, if you know, give you permission to reopen, take one at a time, and put that back on the table so there can be a discussion.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can we come back and reopen Brittany Fletcher?
Yes, we can. Do you want to go ahead and voice your concerns specifically with Ms. Fletcher and then go from there?
Yes. So whenever I was looking at Brittany Fletcher. There is a period where she appears to be practicing as a behavior analyst, and the supervision, like there is documentation that was provided by Candace Bendel that she provided supervision starting on October 1st. So there was time from August until, well, that would have been July 22nd, I believe. Look back here. No, it would have been from August 7th until October 1st, that there's just no documentation that while she was practicing in Arizona that she had supervision. So I don't know if this is a situation where we could request documentation, or if we, or if we as the committee just accept whenever an applicant says, oh, I was practicing as a behavior analysis trainee. Because we heard that from a couple of different applicants today. Oh, I was practicing as a behavior analysis trainee, but we don't have documentation of that time period showing that you were supervised. So, you know, I'm just wondering what we do in this type of situation.
If I may, I think we can kind of talk to have the committee deliberate as a whole to see if there is a majority of the committee who shares your concern.
Yeah.
And if there is a shared concern, then we can decide how to go about addressing it. You could move to recall your recommendation from the committee, and then we can ask for additional information, have her come in, you know, send out a fair, whatever it is you believe is appropriate. If there's not a consensus among all the members, then my guess is the committee's referral to the board would stand.
That sounds great. I would definitely like to hear from fellow committee members what the comfort level is with moving forward.
Dr. Byra.
Sure. Ms. Denton's point, I do feel like over the last several meetings, I think over the past year, there's been a huge influx in our state, right? Like there's job postings every 5 minutes, it seems like everyone is coming to Arizona to come practice here. And of course, no one wants to wait to practice, and I get that. But I don't want the rush to start work here get in the way of you still need to be supervised. So I think, Ms. Denton, to your point, I think that folks, if you're going to do that, there needs to be documentation and proficient documentation, not just like a calendar invite screenshot. What documentation do you have? Who did you meet with from on what day, what time? Who were you discussing? What recommendations, if any, came of that meeting? What's going to be implemented? Not just I had an hour on the calendar and that covers my, 5%, which is what seems to be everyone does. So Ms. Denton, I'm in alignment with you I think there needs to be some more questions asked and proof of supervision and what that entailed.
Other comments? Okay, so given that, Ms. Denton, do you want to make a motion regarding this application?
I don't know how to make this motion. I'm just kind of obviously flubbing this up galore in terms of procedural appropriateness. But what I would like to do is to request a fair. Like, do I need to make a motion to...
So I think the first motion would be is for the committee to withdraw its recommendation of approval of Ms. Fincher's application to the board.
So moved.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
I believe that was 4-0. So there is no recommendation to the board on this application. And I think Ms. Denton has expressed a desire to issue a fair to this applicant. Mm-hmm. Is the committee and the staff clear about what information is requested?
Mr. Chair, I am clear. I want to make sure Zakiya is as well. And then, you know, if I understood this correctly, there may be another motion for another applicant, but I'll stop there and make sure Z is assured that we see this the same way.
Mr. Chair, just for my clarification, so we're talking about when she was employed as a supervising clinician at Centria in Arizona during that period of time?
I had a really hard time hearing that, but it's not the volume. Like it there's something funky, but specifically what I would like to know is when she was at Centria, she said when questioned during the application review that she was acting as a behavior analysis trainee and she had supervision, but we don't have documentation of that supervision. So I would like to request supervision specifically from August 7th, 2023 until October 1st of 2023.
All right. And okay, so board staff, is that clear? Okay. And I'm going to propose that we just go ahead and make a motion with this particular item, and then we will, if Ms. Denton has further applications to discuss, we'll come back and do those next. So so Ms. Denton, would you mind making a motion just to clarify so for us to vote on?
Sure. I make a motion that we submit a request for additional information to obtain documentation surrounding what supervision occurred from that time period.
Okay. All right. And then do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion. Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
And I would just maybe perhaps staff would notify these applicants because they're expecting a recommendation to the board for approval.
Indeed, they'll be notified this afternoon.
Okay. And Ms. Den, did you have any other concerns with any other applications?
I do. I would like to make a motion that we withdraw the recommendation for approval for Jason Silva.
Okay. All right. Do I have a second?
Well, don't we discuss it first before we decide if we're going to remove the recommendation, or do we have to remove that to have discussion? Sorry,
we have to have a second, and then we move into discussion. You know, so if there's no second, then it won't carry, and we don't have a discussion.
Oh, okay, sorry. So second.
Okay. Any further discussion?
So the discussion that I would have here is similar to what I just mentioned. On the application for Mr. Silva, it shows that he was working at Centria starting on October 24th, 2023, here in Arizona. And it shows whenever we look at the description of the work that was provided is he was clinical supervising of ABA services. So my question here is, you know, based off of what Ms. Galvin was articulating, if I've got a concern, should we withdraw this and then ask for additional information? Because the main concern that I have here is that he may have been practicing since October in the capacity of a behavior analyst, but we don't have documentation of any supervision from a licensed behavior analyst that has occurred since October of 2023. That's
further discussion on this piece before we come back and discuss any action.
I mean, I guess the discussion, I guess, would just be like, you know, we see that people are here in roles where they are, where we assume they are being supervised in whatever role they're in, right? So their title may not be a great descriptor of what they're doing, right? So it could be that their title could be behavior analyst, their title could be Dr. Byer, I'm sorry, I did not raise my hand and I just started talking, I apologize. The title could be that of, you know, clinical guru, and you don't, you know, it leaves a lot of gray area, right? And it leaves some discussion of like, well, were you acting as an independently licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona prior to, or were you working under someone who was licensed that was providing you clinical supervision while you were in the state? And was that person that was providing that clinical supervision, were they in good standing with the board? I mean, that's really the question you're posing around these individuals and in this particular person, right? And I think if we have that question, you know, procedurally, we had Jason Silva on the phone, right? So we procedurally should have just asked him to clarify or to get the supervisor on the phone and have that conversation with them. Because, you know, I asked another applicant in a very similar position of like what that looked like. And so if the question then becomes like, we're not going to take their word for it, then there's got to be some documentation around it. Then it's, you know, it's really kind of adding another layer to almost the application, right, to account for that time for this particular individual. And so I'm just, as part of the discussion of this particular one, just making sure we're aware of what we're biting off, mm-hmm. Not just for what is two, but then becomes the question of third and the fourth and the fifth around this, these same questions. And I don't want to not trying to understate what Dr. Byra clearly said before is, there's a rush to get people here to be able to provide access to care and services. And we don't want to, you know, get involved in that rush. We want to make sure we're doing our due diligence. And so if we believe that we have some questions that need to be answered to feel like that and to feel like we've done our due diligence in this particular case or any particular application, then we by all means should request additional information either, you know, with their application or at the time of initial review. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Byra.
Sorry, kind of get myself off mute. Just to piggyback on what Dr. Davey said, it got me thinking too, like what part of the application process do we ask? Like if you've been practicing here, you know, under someone else, like do we ask that? Is there a way to document it? Which is a fair question if you've been here and you're working somewhere. I think oftentimes it's safe to assume that they're acting in some kind of behavior analytic capacity. But I want to make sure that when we're asking for documentation, I don't think we have great documentation thus far that I've seen that people have been submitted. I know nothing's standardized, but I just want to be clear if we do ask for more detail when this comes through that we're just clear with board staff of like what we expect to see. And it's not going to be something like a calendar screenshot. But again, from the onset of doing an application, I guess, how do we change that system to say like, if you've been here and you've been working prior to coming to the licensing board, how do we control like what kind of documentation they give us so that we are prepared and we're not asking a fare after every application?
Ms. Denton.
So I've been trying to think about like where I got this idea for like approving an application and then addressing a supervision issue. And I think it came back from like the applications that we had seen for renewal. Whenever there was like a lapse of your license. And so we needed to see like during that time, whenever you weren't licensed, were you receiving appropriate supervision? And we opened complaints and we evaluated the complaints and, you know, like so as we're looking for this, you know, that's kind of procedurally where I was going, and I apologize for this, and I feel quite bad for the applicants that were on here, not that that makes it any different, but I'm just trying to think about, you know, consistency. Like if we are requesting that of lapsed licenses, to me it is similar to a situation where you have been practicing before you got your license. Maybe.
Well, I raised my hand.
Dr. Davey.
Because I just want to be official in raising my hand. Listen, I'm not against the fair on this, and I don't think it's a problem, but I think it does begin the question of consistency, right? Like if this is the case of something that's kind of raised to our something's raised our the specter of where we've got some questions about this, or we're starting to see some more time gaps, right? Someone who's been in the state for 6 months prior to licensure and in some strange position that we can't quite figure out what that included. That's one piece of the puzzle, right? But I also think like asking the applicant of like whether or not they were, you know, being supervised by a licensed behavior analyst during the call or either through the application process would be helpful. And that's the reason the one applicant that I spoke to today, I asked the question because there was that time that individual had been practicing or had been in the state with a title of like clinical supervisor for very similar to the other two since August. And I wanted to know. And so I think in terms of precedent, if we're going to open up this can of worms and this is something we're going to have to deal with at a systemic or at a systems level of gathering that detail. Otherwise, most people are in the state doing some sort of supervised behavior analytic work while they're working towards one certification or two licensure. And I think the question then becomes you could almost take every single application and be like, well, what were you doing for those 2 months? What were you doing for that month? And that may be a very slippery slope without a process in place. I'm not saying we shouldn't ask the question, but I'm just asking us to think about, you know, it's not something that like in the application review that I'm trying to account for every single minute. And if I'm looking at their supervisor that signed off on their 1500 hours was licensed during that time, then they're good to go. But if we're talking about an extended period of gap of people moving from one state to the next and where we have concerns around remote supervision, then maybe that's a little bit different. So I'll stop there, but just wanted to make sure that had that information out there for the fellow committee members. So again, I think go back to the question at hand, if we want to ask for a fair, let's do it and let's get some more information and bring the individual back and answer the question. I think then the question that we have to answer for the new business is this something we want to dive into application after application, and how are we going to capture that information?
Yeah.
So again, I would point out that I have an applicant like that today that just verbally asked the question and moved on.
Yeah. What is going to be the level of our acceptable documentation of them working in the state? Is it going to be just simply a question and an interview for them coming into the committee, or is it going to be a signed documentation of supervision? And so I think that needs to be prescribed in whatever direction we want to go. So Ms. Den.
So I think whenever I was thinking of like the consistency piece here was whenever we had those lapsed licenses, the things that we accepted were an attestation from a supervisor. We accepted whenever we accepted meeting notes, you know, from supervisors that detailed what they talked about. But I don't remember us accepting someone just saying, yeah, I was supervised.
Yep. Okay. Dr. Davey.
But I would just add that I think that that's a slightly different slice, right, Ms. Denton? Like, this is an initial application coming through to us versus someone who has let their license lapse that is fully, you know, in our, you know, essentially has been practicing. We know they've been practicing. And so the question is, you know, to connect the dots is right there. Like, well, what happened while you were not supposed to be, like, while you were lapsed, right? Like what were you doing during that period of time? And did you rectify the situation in a timely fashion and in a fashion that would be acceptable to the committee and to other stakeholders? So a little bit different, I think, just in terms of my view of that. But it does not change my position that if committee members have concerns about an application, then by all means we should ferret and get the information. So, you know, at the end of the day, I firmly believe that if you've got a question, then we need to get it answered.
All right. Any further discussion on this? Okay, so the motion is that we are retracting our recommendation to the board right now. So that's our current vote. Okay. All right. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Ms. Denton, would you like to make any another motion for anything?
Yes, I would like to make a motion that we send a fare to Jason Silva to request documentation of supervision by a licensed behavior analyst since October 24th of 2023. And that's because he stated he was acting as a behavior analysis trainee.
All right, thank you. Do I have a second on that?
Second.
Okay, any further discussion on that? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right. Okay, any other items related to that? Or similar? Dr. Byra.
Thanks. You know, just to again go back to what Dr. Davey said, like I don't want it to become prohibitive, right? That we get on these calls and reviewing applications and all of them result in a fair. I want to somehow find a balance between us being confident that they were, you know, behaving in a way that's accordance with our statutes, but also making it so that we can get folks, you know, licensed that they are able to practice. We don't want to, you know, prohibit people from being able to do that. So I'm just not really quite sure how to strike that balance.
Should we put an agenda item on a future agenda to have this discussion? I'm not sure what we would supply to inform the discussion, but I think just having it as an agenda item, everyone will know, you know, what this means and, you know, take the opportunity that's presented to you. Yeah. That's my best suggestion.
Yeah. Dr. Byra, would you like that as a future agenda to discuss?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. Dr. Davey?
I would suggest in terms of the data, Ms. Packman, would be just data on the time to process an application. So let's just assume that a set applicant becomes a BCBA next day ready, you know, fills out their LBA form and they're, you know, in the state. Let's just say they've been under supervision to get to that point. You know, I think it'd be nice just to know like, well, hey, you know, typical applications processed in 60 days. So that means that we would all, you know, if we're talking about this, then we're talking about every application's going to need to account for, you know, on average, that 60-day gap when they come forward to us. So maybe some, just that timeline would be helpful to us to understand where the potential lack of supervision or how long the potential lack of supervision could be occurring while a license application is adjudicated. Does that make sense?
Yes, I reserve the right to have a sidebar conversation with you about this too.
I reserve the right to have that sidebar with you.
To try to elude me? You just try.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. Any other agenda items or future agenda items? Okay. All right. Well, moving on to agenda item number 15. Oh, Dr. Davey.
No, that was from previous.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So agenda item number 15, adjourn. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion carries. We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.